Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We're back, all three of us, in the rugby dungeon. No TMO shipping containers required. They've gone back to delivering. What are they delivering this week?
Semiconductors.
Yeah.
The wafers for semiconductors.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Thank you very much for listening, JB. How are you doing?
Very well, Tim. How are you?
Yeah, now I can see your nanos in person. They're very
and what,
nice.
These nano 12s? Let's not talk about them.
Also wearing some very nice new shoes by the look of it, Phil.
What are those, Phil?
These old things.
Are these your new running shoes?
These are not running shoes. These are some New Balance fashion trainers.
Very aggressive.
Fashion sneakers.
They are, aren't
incredibly
they?
Aggressive soles.
Yeah. I don't know what to think about them, really.
What
could you do with them?
It's like part crampon, isn't it? You could.
It is.
You've got an Arctic expedition in them. It's impressive. Anyway, how are you, Phil?
Very good, thank you, Tim.
Good. Just firstly, announcement to make. We have rejected a hostile takeover offer of the Egg Chasers podcast from an unnamed billionaire.
Yeah. We offered him a place on the board. Wasn't interested.
Wasn't having any of it. So it's just the three of us and you. Thank you for listening. And you can find us, well, wherever you get your podcasts. In one way, you can thank us for having a podcast for you every single Monday, and we had one there yesterday morning, and here we are on Easter Monday recording this Tuesday this week. You can thank us by subscribing, by leaving a 5-star review, by going to patreon.com/eggchasers, and all your correspondents welcome at contacteggchasers@gmail.com, and through the podcast I will pepper in some of the emails because there's some good discussion points.
I'll mention another podcast today, actually. My friends over at the Thistle podcast, who deal with Scottish rugby, if that's your thing. In fact, it's the only podcast that deals with Scottish rugby that's worth listening to. But they asked me, where's your patron? Why don't you plug it anymore? And the answer is, we don't, because we forget. But we do have a patron. And not only that, we've got two podcasts which we've already recorded to put on the patron.
So that you haven't put up?
Haven't put up.
Oh, wow.
So here's the thing, right? We're not leaving this room today until you watch me put them up. I know that's kind of a bit of a drag on your time, but still.
Fine, at least it will happen. Yeah.
Back to back. One about Russell Earnshaw, and the other one is about...
Yeah.
It wasn't
premeditated Russell Earnshaw, but no. It was...
Russell Earnshaw was the name we pulled out of the rugby match.
Coaching methods in rugby.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the other one was...
It was...
Hmm.
Oh, I can't remember now.
Was it the women's coach? Simon Middleton. Did we pull his name out?
We did pull his name out at one point. Whether that's the one to go up.
I can't remember. I guess it probably is.
Maybe we should leave it as a tease.
Yeah. A tease, yeah.
Sign up to Patreon to find out what the other...
Yeah, and what we were talking about, because I don't remember.
Yeah.
But obviously we're just coming off the back of an amazing European weekend. And I'm going to start with that question that I asked last week. Now we've seen both legs of this for the first time ever. Two-legged affair. Would you keep this format for next season? Yay or nay?
Yes, 100%.
I actually would keep this.
Well, that's a bit of a turnaround, that, isn't it?
Yeah. 100% turnaround. Yeah.
I was more neutral than you two initially, but I would keep it. And I was thinking as well, because it allows you to get an extra round of home and away games in, which is, it is actually quite important, because these games, most of them were sellouts. I'd be surprised if any of them were significantly under capacity. And that is very important at this moment in time for all rugby clubs up and down
it's true.
Up and down the world.
The flip side, it is the It's the yin and the yang. Unfortunately, the pool stage, I think, was...
The pool stage has got to go back to normal.
You have to do something different with a pool stage. The two-pool format is just nonsense because you have no idea what's going on any stage until it's explained to you right at the end.
But that would mean extra games.
Well, I think you've got to do a... It might be eight pools of three to square the games in there. Something needs to be done to get fewer pool games, but pools that actually make sense.
Okay, yeah, I'm up for that. I would be up for that in that context. I don't like the pool stage, and the two-legged affair was the compromise because of a flawed pool stage. If you can get both together, I'm up for that. The only other thing that concerns me in terms of format and this competition, when you look at it from a bird's eye point of view, is hearing noises about top eight qualifying for Champions Cup, which would be farcical.
It'd be farcical, but I guess if you've got a format that you like, including the home and away aggregate game, which I think has to be a fixture.
It just dilutes the quality.
It does
but then it's, can you make the numbers work without it? Because then it's either, it doesn't have to be this, but you're kind of at 16 or 24.
Why don't just go for top 13? And dispense with the Premiership. Just have one competition.
the problem is, in the pool stages, it would naturally be seeded. So you might end up with Leinster playing home and away against... Who's eighth in the Premiership?
Whoever it is. Usually Northampton.
London Irish.
London Irish or Northampton or one of those teams.
Well, I mean, every Premiership club's decent. But you would get some total mismatches in the pool stage.
Yeah.
So anyway... We'll work that one out. But yes, the format threw up in a way that I didn't expect. It threw up some incredible matchups, very tight finishes with lots on the line.
So let's talk about why this works. I didn't think it'd work. I don't think rugby is suited to this format of game. I don't think that now at all. In fact, thinking back about it, it's more suited. Because with football, you know, if you have the away goals or whatnot like they used to... The goals are sort of very binary. Obviously, you know, they only come in once, but with rugby, because of the multiple ways that you can score, it just changes the picture completely. And it also means that teams come out and attack. So you saw Clermont doing everything that they could to score tries. I mean, they didn't, but they did try. Stade Francais tried their little socks off.
They made that game more interesting. That was one of the games that we thought was done and dusted.
Yeah.
They made it more interesting at the start, although obviously the red card
for
60 minutes concluded it. Phenomenal game.
Yeah.
And Stade Francais at one point, I think, had they either went ahead in the tie or they were within a point.
Yeah.
So it was bloody close.
But the point scoring is an interesting one because no tie demonstrates it more than the Munster Exeter tie. That was three tries all, but Munster won the tie comfortably because they took their penalties and Exeter, through optimism, confidence, hubris, call it what you want, they turned down, they turned down more than enough kickable penalties that had they kicked them every time, they would have won the tie.
Yeah. And also, I think it really magnifies the... better team in this sort of fixture, because you get, obviously there's two chances to see the same game and the score is aggregated, but where a team has an advantage over another team, it really starts to show through, and you get a real clarity of who is good, who's not, and why.
Yeah, and we saw that, like the mismatches. There weren't really many. The Leinster Connacht second leg was a bit of a mismatch.
Yeah.
And both legs of the Leicester-Clermont game, Leicester were just the better team. Not by an enormous... Not by a chasm, but they were 10, 15 points better in both legs. They were comfortably better in both legs.
The Connacht one was particularly amusing. I mean, how do you gee up your players without being offensive or geeing up the opposition players? There's very few things that you can say. So you had to read between the lines of what Andy Friend was trying to tell his team. He's got to convince his players that they're as good as Leinster. Mm-hmm. And they're not. So how do you convince them? Are you going to lie to them? Are you going to say that they're really, really good? Or do you downplay how good Leinster are? And I think that's what he tried to do. So prior to the game, there's a lot of talk about, they're only human. They're only human. Which is basically as far as you can go with your team talk without saying anything inflammatory towards Leinster, isn't it? You can't really, you can't go any further than that. They're not overrated. Is that what you're saying? They're overrated? Anyway, it didn't work out for him.
Not quite.
Not exactly.
Not this week. They put in a very good performance last week.
They did.
This week was a step too far for them.
And they're a good team. They are. You watch them and they're a bloody good team. It's not like, you know, they didn't show up. They showed up, they threw everything at it, and Leinster are just Leinster, aren't they?
Yeah, Connacht don't have 13 of the starting 15 being internationals.
Yeah,
and that is one takeaway for the quarterfinals, because I just feel sorry for the commentators with Leicester Leinster. That's gonna.
What a classic tie, though.
Yeah, it is a classic tie. That's gonna catch them out. So just call Leinster Ireland for the purpose of that game.
Tell you what,
but blue team and green team.
It's amazing what you can do with state sponsored rugby. if states are powerful enough to lock everyone in their houses for 2 years, they're certainly powerful enough to run four rugby franchises. And lo and behold, they're doing very well.
Yeah. English teams didn't fare so well.
Oh. Well, I don't know. I mean, Sale did very, very well.
It was just good that we were guaranteed at least one English team.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it was the two weakest English teams left in the competition.
We'll talk about them when we get to them. I'm not full of praise for this performance. In fact, for this game, actually. Well, actually, it's quite an exciting game.
Let's talk about it, because last week...
Well, no, let's not.
Okay.
Because it is. It's probably the two poorest teams... a tie, it was the two poorest teams overall. That's not to disparage Bristol and Sale. That's just objective fact.
I'm not sure.
If you gave every team a score from 1 to 16 and added a ranking and added them up together, the Sale Bristol would have the highest number.
Okay. Yes.
As a tie, it was the least compelling on paper.
I think watched last week as well.
So last week was dire.
Last week was awful. This game was entertaining.
It's one of those. It's I think that was the one tie where you would say neither team, whoever wins, is going to be a realistic challenger to win the title.
No. Well, they've got a trip to La Défense Arena.
Quite.
It's going to be pretty tough.
Or is it the La Défense Arena?
It is.
Oh, no, it is.
Yes.
No, hold on. Because Munster aren't playing at Thomond Park because Ed Sheeran's there.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to shift to Dublin, unless there's a GAA stadium or something.
I think it's confirmed at the Aviva.
Oh, it is.
I believe so. Yeah.
It's a shame. But the other one is... I think there is another team that's missing out on a...
Oh, really?
Or is it if Racing get to the semi-final?
Maybe it's a semi-final.
Maybe it's a semi-final.
But yeah, I'm certain it's been confirmed as the La Défense Arena.
Okay, yeah. All right.
For Sale to travel, which I wouldn't be putting much money on Sale, to be honest.
What? I think you're mad. I tell you what, this really works out well for them. I think if there's a team that can take on the French teams physically and go over there and dish out beating.
What about emotionally?
Yeah, because it didn't work out too well last time they tried to out-muscle a French team
when they went to La Rochelle.
In a quarter-final.
Sorry, let me be very clear on this, because obviously you two do not know what you're talking about. They did not get out-muscled in La Rochelle, they got out-emotioned. Now, this was their mistake last time round. This time they'll make no mistake. It will be physicality from the off. You can't out-emotion a French team. Imagine trying that as your strategy. Let's out-emotion the French. No. But they did have a neuroscientist in this week, apparently. Have you heard this story?
Yes. I saw this.
Neuropsychologist.
Yeah.
What is the difference?
It was careful.
Oh, sorry. One's based on science and one's nonsense.
One's more emotional than science-based.
Yeah. Well, it worked. Whatever it did, it worked. I mean,
It did.
Be interesting to see if correlation is causation. What, equals causation, but fine.
We've got Phil here, right?
I hope we're not going to talk about this.
We've got Phil here. I was there, and it was the closest of the quarter-final ties. 50 points to 49 over two legs. Let's talk about Ulster Toulouse.
Oh, my brave boys.
How were you feeling, Phil?
You know what? I said last week, if we'd have gone up with the 13-point lead, gone finished the game before that... DuPont scored the last try last week. If we'd gone in with that, I think we would be 70-30 or 80-20 favourites. I said last week, with Toulouse getting that last 7 points, only a 6-point deficit, and the way that they finished like a train last week, I thought they were going into this, even though Ulster had home advantage, I thought Toulouse were favourites. But I still had the hope, and there were times in that game where Ulster scored some brilliant tries. The two McIlroy tries were superb. And they were defensively very good, set piece very good. And you thought maybe they can do it. Maybe Ulster can do it. But
there was a sense of inevitability after that red card, wasn't there?
There was a little bit. Yeah. And I don't really have a problem with the red card. I mean, it's according to the laws, it is a red card. It's a bit of a strange one because it was Jalonche, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He was out of control and torpedoes himself at Tom O'Toole, who was just basically stood there.
Oh, I thought it should be two red cards.
Well,
red card.
It could be.
It might be with sighting panel-wise.
Yeah.
With Rob Herring, wasn't it?
I think it's funny because Herring is the more illegal action because he makes no attempt to wrap. He goes in with a tucked arm. But because the force of Jalonche's torpedo has been taken out by the shoulder of Tom O'Toole, Herring doesn't actually hit him with that much force.
Was it Jalonche?
Yeah.
Was it? Did he not start Jalonche? I thought he started.
Yeah. Open side.
No, it's a replacement.
No, I'm pretty certain it was Jalonche.
I think it's a replacement.
Doesn't matter who it was.
Whoever it was,
it was a large...
It's a large French back row.
Large Toulouse man.
Yeah.
Fine. We basically knew. As soon as that gets cited to the TMO, you know what's happening. You know it's going to be a red card. Well, there was force, it's contact to the head.
So this one I'm thinking of did end up with a red card because of a second yellow card. But do you see the one, the Stade Francais red card?
Yeah.
That is a straight red. I can't see. But they're not even talking about the thing which matters, which is the Stade Francais player's head smashes into the head of the Racing player. Even Benjamin Kaiser is saying, well, he's out cold there and his face is rubbing on the turf, which are pretty painful. But they're all talking about the shoulder into the back and the lack of a wrap. It's like, this is not what you need to be talking about. The TMO did it. The BT Sports comms guys did it. That wasn't the infringement in my mind. It was the head-to-head which knocked him out. Mm. Nobody
that
spoke
was,
about that.
That was brutal.
Absolutely
that was
brutal.
Horrible.
I also think he scored, but that's a separate issue.
Yeah, well, surely he was in touch.
No, I think he puts it down and sort of flops over the ball. I actually think he scored.
Anyway.
Doesn't matter.
Just on this occasion, this was one of those times when the sort of 10-year-old in me would just not believe what I was doing. I watched the second half in the Toulouse dugout.
And I was
thinking to myself as I was doing it, and you know, Charlie Farmoina came and sat next to me, and I was thinking, my God, this is the most decorated club team in the history of the sport. The world player of the year on the field. The current European champions. And I'm sat here. It was bonkers. And the atmosphere. I know you've been to Ravenhill, Phil. And you've tasted what it's like there. It was unreal.
The atmosphere sounded amazing from TV. But
unbelievable.
It can't do it justice.
Well, no, I think it did do it justice, actually. I think that but it was just unbelievable. And I was absolutely gutted. So, yeah, you must have been.
Yeah, it did feel inevitable, but it was still tough to take.
Yeah.
Now, you got to speak to Dan McFarland after the game, and he said that he didn't pin it on the red card, which I agree with.
100%.
I don't think the red card changed the game at all. I think the momentum was already in that direction, but there were a couple of late decisions. James Hume under the sticks. And there's one other, but I remember watching it late on Saturday and just thinking, God, the fine margin of those decisions, but then pulling myself back to what we always say, which is, if you don't do it in 80, you can't pick out a single moment.
And it was an intercepted try. And
yeah, the intercepted try.
It was errors for two of Toulouse's tries.
Yeah. Toulouse's tries are really interesting, aren't they? Because they just come from nothing. So if
they're
you look
so
at,
dangerous.
Yeah. If you look at who played the better rugby, who was the better rugby team, Ulster were a better rugby team by miles. They were more fluid, they were organised, they did everything. But the sheer talent that Toulouse can put on the field means all of a sudden you're in the throwing sticks.
Yeah.
They do all the right things.
But what, and Ulster did kind of, it was just, like you say, that last 5%. They did most, even from last week to this week, last week the breakdown was an absolute mess. And they tidied that up. They were so clean.
Yeah.
Generally across the 18
and
minutes.
And they managed to get a lot of pressure on. So I can't remember seeing any professional side make that many handling errors.
And Phil, fair play, you've been raving about James Hume for a long time now, and that guy's class.
He's a very class good operator. He's great defensively. He hits hard. He reads the game really well. His distribution's good. He's got a lovely outside break. He's just a quality
player. You know, thinking about it, I'm just looking through the team sheet now of who had good games and who didn't. Robert Balakoon is basically missing most of the game, or marked out of the game.
Yeah, I think marked out of the game, which created more room for Nathan McElroy, who was very good.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. Looking at the rest of the back line, everyone had a good game. Everyone had a good game. I thought McCloskey was very, very impactful because he offers something different.
Yeah.
When Mike Lowry started getting into the game, he looks like a guy who's going to get picked up by a French team at some point. Unless I would give him more caps. I don't know why. I just feel he'd have a lot of success in France.
Their back line, outside of the 9 and 10, who they've brought in, John Cooney from... Well, they brought him in from...
Connacht,
but he's a former Leinster. And Billy Burns from Gloucester, obviously.
Yeah.
Outside of that, they're all 23 or 24 or under academy products. Well, Stuart McCloskey's an academy guy, a bit older, 29, 30.
But yeah.
The rest of them, McElroy, Lowry, Balakoon and Hume...
Yep.
Young local lads.
And then Rob Little and Doak on the bench.
Well, Marshall.
And Marshall. Yeah. But Marshall's obviously not Luke Marshall's 30.
Something.
30s. Yes.
30s.
Whereas Little and Doak are both young. I think Doak might even still be a teenager.
And they have made massive strides and hopefully they'll continue. I think Balakoon is in line for a test start.
He's got to be starting on merit
as on one wing for Ireland.
Yeah, I thought...
And Lowry has closed the gap at fullback massively.
Yeah, although Hugo Keenan is...
Yeah, he was ace.
He's been in brilliant form recently. He's gone from... When I first saw him for both Leinster and Ireland, I wasn't certain he would make it, and I think he has now nailed that Ireland 15 shirt.
Yeah.
I think he's been brilliant the last 12 months or so. So yeah, Lowry... might be a bit of a stretch. But McLowry played well, because he can play 10 as well. So he played well for the last 20 minutes or so when he filled in at first receiver.
Yeah.
Lowry's the kind of guy you want in your squad because of his versatility as well. And he's got a bit of X factor.
But, I think they, understandably and rightly, will be thinking that was an opportunity lost because it was in their hands and it was errors on their part that made it. Because Toulouse weren't at their normal level. And I spoke to Clement Patrono after the game. And I just said, a lot of errors, Clement. And, you know, well done on the win, all the rest of it, but a lot of errors. How do you explain it? And Cyril Bye missed the game with fatigue. Antoine Dupont and other Six Nations players got given a couple of days off this week.
I'm not surprised.
So I basically said, you know, is what we're seeing from Toulouse at the moment the cost of 11 French internationals in the Six Nations squad and winning a Grand Slam? And Clement Patrono was like, yeah, that's basically it. They're nowhere near where they can be or need to be or will need to be for the quarterfinals, which is, let's not forget, only 3 weeks, 2 weeks, 3 weeks away.
Right.
Yeah, 6th, 7th, 8th of May.
They do feel a little bit like a team who are sort of placeholding, just getting through it, getting ready to regroup. Now, I want to know some more gossip. Who else did you talk to? Like, did you just do any mingling, any mixing?
Did you have a big chat with Big Charlie?
Big Charlie Farnwin. Oh no, he was knackered, but just general pleasantries. And,
he's a slightly big bloke, isn't he?
He's a large man.
I'd love to meet him, you know. Jerome, he's a hell of a player.
Jerome Kano. I was just chucking a ball about with him before the game.
Yes, awesome. This is the guy I was thinking of. I've encountered Jerome Kano on a rugby pitch in his kit, and he's now a coach. Is he not
skills coach? So yeah, Clement Patrono and another one of the coaches that I don't know the name of were doing a little, obviously something they do before the game. They were doing from the 22 a drop goal crossbar challenge, and Jerome Kano was the guy just fielding the balls. He was standing behind the posts and passing the ball back to them. Wonderful. The coaches before the players came out, and you know, when a ball strayed my way, I'd wang it, and then it became a thing. I'd wang it to Jerome Kano, and he'd pass it on to Clement Buckner.
Yeah. Awesome, awesome. Cool.
Did you manage to chat?
Sorry?
Did you manage to chat to him?
Yeah.
What was he like? Come on. Give us more.
He's humble, quiet, calm, which is... He's. I'd say Jerome Kano is the classic example of someone... What's that phrase?
Is it the carry big stick?
Yeah, what's that phrase? Stick, to something, tread lightly and carry a big stick. It's like Jerome Kano is an animal.
Well, is it not...
Such a softly spoken... nice bloke.
Is it not similar to the way that, you know, adult male lions aren't really particularly afraid of anything and therefore don't really care much? Like, there's not... I can't think of many situations where he's going to be threatened or intimidated. So, yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's an enormous bloke. Enormous bloke. Yeah, I would have given my right arm to have sat next to Charlie Farmerina and just chatted to him for five minutes. Well, or chatted at him.
Because props might have to go back onto the field, so... I did think about that, and I thought,
you can't.
So, I live very close to Jake Cooper-Woolley, who is in Charleston. I'm sure when he sees me, he just crosses the road now because he knows it's more, because he knows it's North Central. Charlie.
Jake.
Where do you see him normally? In the butchers?
No, on our street.
On your street, yeah. How far up is he?
He's handy to have in the neighbourhood watch group.
How far up is he?
4 or 5 doors.
Really?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we're trying to get him as the next scrum coach of Talk H, which would be decent.
Wonder what he's doing now, do you know?
I do know. I think he's in construction, just like Phil.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, on Knockout Rugby, we got knocked out of the cup this weekend.
Oh, JB.
22 games won, 2 games lost, 1 against Widnes in one cup.
You need to remind me about that, this unbeaten statement you made last week.
Yep. And one in the next cup, which is against Old Widnes, and we had one hell of a tussle with them. They came back from 20 points down. They won a penalty. The kicks the corner. We stole their line out, and the ref gave it us off the floor too quickly. Free kick. They played one phase. They shipped it to their fly half, who mustn't be over 19. Cool as you like. Dropped on his boot. Won the game. Last play of the game.
Wow.
How cool is that? I mean, it's not cool that we lost. But I've never lost to a drop goal before. And if there's a team that I would like to see in the final, it'd definitely be Winnies. Mm. So that's going to be a cracking final when they play West Park.
That is a bit disappointing after your perfect season in the league, winning the league. But just, you could have had... If you'd have spread around those 2 losses in the cup to the league, you still would have won the league.
Yeah.
And you could have won 3 bits of silverware.
Yeah, well, look, it's the failures that inspire Tom Brady, not the things that he wins. So
next season,
to stoke the fire for 4 more years, it's important.
I need to find some emails and contacts. We've been contacted by people that your statement that there's only 2 unbeaten sides in league rugby.
That's what we thought, but apparently there's another one.
There is another one, which I will find. But in the meantime, there's this email here from James Daly. Contact edchasers@gmail.com, and the subject title is Win a League by Losing, because we were discussing, you know, how proud you should be if, because I've never won a league trophy in all my years of playing rugby, so you should enjoy it. And this is James's tale of lifting a trophy. He said one of the only times he's won a competition was at under 16s. The main competition was the cup, which was a knockout tournament. The Shield was also a knockout tournament, but the Shield was only for the teams who lost in the first round of the cup. So his team got knocked out in the first round.
Yep.
Then they won the Shield because all 3 teams that they were meant to play cancelled and conceded. So he won the competition he won as a player was with no victories whatsoever. So
played one, lost one, yeah. win the Shield.
He said, not quite movie style, but success nonetheless.
Awesome.
Well, it's a bit like Montpellier. They've got to the quarterfinals of the Champions Cup by they've like 1-2, lost 3, something like that in there.
Have they?
They got a bye because of the Leinster. Remember Leinster had their game.
More COVID madness.
COVID madness, yeah. And they got absolutely spanked by Leinster, like 89-7 reverse fixture, they also lost to someone else. They snuck into the quarterfinals because they were playing top seeds Quins. Snuck in by the skin of their teeth and then lost one of the games against Quins, but snuck it through.
Well, and here they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again,
well, Ulster were second top seed, weren't they? I think.
Oh, that, yeah,
and they faced lower seed.
Yeah.
Toulouse
because of COVID.
Because
stuff.
Because Toulouse got hammered 28-0 by Cardiff.
That's why I feel even more sorry for Ulster.
So you're
so unlucky to be facing Toulouse.
You win four
and
from
then beating Toulouse in Toulouse. Yeah. And you're still not through.
You win 4 from 4 in the group stage, and cheers, boys! You've got a trip to Toulouse, reigning champions.
Well, I mean, the trip to Toulouse wasn't the problem.
You're right; it wasn't.
Sounds like you'd like to have trips to Toulouse every weekend.
Every week.
Yeah. But the Montpellier Quins fixture was actually the kind of the inverse of Ulster, who not the inverse, but similar to Ulster. Well, Ulster let their lead slip in the first leg, and that cost them. And Quins had a particularly off day and left too much of a gap to make up.
Yes, although they only didn't make it up because of the missed Marcus Smith conversion.
Yeah.
And really, Quins had one bad half of rugby. The first half against Montpellier, in Montpellier last week, they were woeful, conceded very soft tries and just weren't switched on. Every other half of rugby, they were the better team throughout the game.
I only saw the first half of this game, but I absolutely loved it. The quality of rugby was outstanding.
The first half was the better half of this. It was 28-17 at half time, and then it was 5-3 in the second half. So all of the action happened in the first half.
Yeah.
Partly because in the second half, Montpellier had a yellow card late in the second half with about 10 minutes to go, and Quins needed 6 points, but they went for try and they kept on. They eroded the whole 10 minutes of that sin bin period by trying to get a try and being rebuffed, and finally I think it was Lewis Lynas' second try that they scored. But they'd already eaten up all the time on the clock, or almost all the time on the clock. So by the time they scored that try, Montpellier get their man back and they were able to hold out in the last few minutes. But even with that, had Marcus Smith kicked what for him was a relatively easy conversion, they would have won. They would have gone through.
Yeah. Do you know what we did see loads of in this game? 5 metre scrums. Tons of them.
In that last section,
there
was loads of them.
So many 5 metre scrums. That's what you did miss, JB.
Brilliant. Why?
There was...
Because Quins were just pumping them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was Marler and Wilco low on at that time.
Oof, good luck.
Which is fairly handy.
they've not got bad props on as replacement. Lamasselli was on the bench. And they might even have another French international that came on. I can't remember his name now. Montpellier.
Oh, the guy who... The one who did the big punch.
No, he wasn't playing, actually.
Howass.
I think he does. Howass does.
Well, Montpellier, they certainly changed their team up from last week.
Yeah. A bit of hubris on that part. And Henry Thomas, did you see him? Speaking of props for Montpellier, Henry Thomas did a brilliant tweet and just screenshotted all of the journalists, including Stephen Jones. And I think it was Chris Foy and a couple of others, saying, oh, well, Montpellier, well, that's it. We know the result of that tie. Quins are going through because Montpellier can't even be bothered. And Henry Thomas took great pleasure in screenshotting that after the game and going, maybe pay our whole squad a bit more respect.
Yeah. You know, I thought it was remarkably stupid of any writer to write what they wrote about Montpellier. I said it before the game. I was looking through the team sheet and just taking it on face value. I'm not talking about who they left out. Just looking at the team that they put out, I thought, yeah, that's a bloody good team, right? And if you don't know some of these guys, you better educate yourself and actually find out who they are. Because I thought Louis Forsans in particular is one hell of a talent. I mean, there is a reason that they can get rid of World Cup winner Pollard or just shift him to 12, which coincidentally is another guy that played. Now, we've seen this before somewhere, haven't we? We've seen it with Bristol recently, and it's not quite panned out for Bristol, but this is what I suspect Montpellier were trying to do. If they looked at their game last week, they would say they started strong and they faded towards the end. Right?
The scoring pattern certainly justifies that point.
Yeah. if you look at the NRL, they all tell you all the time, because they use interchanges, it's about having your strongest team on the field at the end, because that's when the majority of your points are scored. And we all know Harlequins can score points whenever. Harlequins, and it is an
entire. Harlequins call them game changers. Eddie Jones calls them finishers, which is an element of just semantics
what
and rebranding.
What is it Pat Lamb calls them again? He calls them something. Systems.
Love makers or
system
something.
Love makers.
Love makers.
Something.
Something like that. Yeah.
I can't remember, he's got a name for it.
So,
anyway.
Yeah. So on the bench, we've got Zach Mercer, Demaru, Boutier. This is a good quality squad. And to me, it was plain as day. They looked like they wanted to bring on quality towards the end. I don't see why that it would be controversial or a silly thing at all, really.
So it looked to me like they played a weaker team than they did last week. Overall, I think. But they've judged it just right. They have judged it to absolute perfection because they've won.
Yeah.
So you can't discredit them in the slightest.
Well, just to, and again, it's easy to Monday morning quarterback. I'm sure a lot of people would have been saying similar stuff, but a couple of the tweets that Henry Thomas took a screenshot of, one said, Quinn's going through then because Montpellier have rested several key players for the second leg at the Stoop. French club clearly prioritising the top 14. Doesn't do much for the integrity of the Champions Cup.
Yeah, that's just
who said that?
That was Chris Foy.
He's a good
rugby writer.
He is a good rugby writer, but that is absolute nonsense. Because the whole point in having a massive squad is you compete on two fronts.
Yeah,
that's what they're built for. I mean, particularly the French teams. This is exactly what they are built for. They can rotate. As for
Stephen Jones said, very sad move for Montpellier. Almost a full second 15 for the return leg v Quins undermines totally the whole European competition at a time when it needs more credibility.
Yeah, well, I mean, we can tell them all this in the Rugby Writers Awards dinner on Thursday. Are you going this year?
I haven't been, no.
You got invited last time around, didn't you?
No, well, yeah.
You have been invited before.
I've been invited before, yeah.
I've not.
You've not got your invite this year?
No, it's lost again.
Yeah, mine neither.
I can't believe it. You know, you talk to what, 30,000 people every week, but you can't make the Rugby Writers Awards? Unbelievable.
Oh, I tell you, apparently we were mentioned on Radio 4 last week.
Oh, were we? What did we do? Oh, God, what did we do?
No, nothing negative. So, as a family do this weekend, and my auntie, who I've never mentioned the podcast to, so someone must have mentioned it to her, said, oh, I heard you're on Radio 4. I heard you mentioned on Radio 4 the other day. I was like, did you?
Woman said,
said they do feedback on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
Which is a bit like points of view. Apparently, this is a second-hand description given to me by a 70-something-year-old late auntie.
This is going to be one of our favourite Twitter folks and, complaining in points of view fashion.
No, it was, they apparently asked a question which was, where do you get your sports news? And they went out to members of the public. And one member of the public.
Oh, yes,
now, I don't actually know if my auntie knows what this podcast is called. So she may well, the person may well have said the rugby pod.
Rugby pod.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
But let's just say it was us.
No, that's a rugby pod.
It would be in keeping. You know, was it Telegraph had us as one of the 30 best podcasts in the world?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And was that sports podcast? No, it was a different one. Had
It was Guardians.
Guardian was one of the best sports podcasts in the world. The Telegraph was one of the top 50 podcasts full stop in the world. We are the only rugby podcast that's been nominated for best sports show at the Arias, which is the,
let's not talk about that,
the Audio and Radio Industry Awards.
That was embarrassing. That. If only we'd have done a podcast near a major city centre bombing or a terrorist attack, we would have cleaned up. Or if we had enough people crying.
It's
the only way you win that.
You joke about that, but I got nominated 4 years in a row for my breakfast show. And I can say it now.
Yeah, yeah.
I got nominations because I worked out what the formula was. And the formula is, at some point, you need to do something that makes the people listening cry.
Really?
Yeah. Mm.
What can we do? Like bullying?
So cynically, I engineered some... it just so happens that the things that I put in the entry were genuine, amazing moments, but... So they weren't cynically made, but they were very, very cynically put into the award entry.
So they did have... Did TalkSport win something, didn't they? And it's called, like, the Sporting Couch or something? Do you remember this? So,
oh, yeah, it was Clark Carlisle talking about his...
It's like crying on a couch, basically, wasn't it? Like, just come and be emotionally incontinent on my couch. But some of the concepts that come up for podcasts now are just utterly bizarre. I heard of one, I won't say what the actual title of it was, but it was the same kind of thing. It was just, we're going to talk to sports stars about emotion. Why? I mean, there's so much stuff to talk about in sport. Emotion? Are you sure? Because they just want, I don't know what it is, they want to take it a step further.
I bet there was a sponsor attached.
Yeah, I bet.
If someone's paying you to do it, do it.
It's like some marketing bods get in a room and they think, what new podcast can we make? And it'll be something absolutely horrendous, which has got a lifespan of about 6 episodes.
Well, this is it. And so when people talk to me about podcasts and stuff, I never say try and come up with something new. Do something that you love, that you're absolutely passionate about, or have a very deep understanding of. And it doesn't matter if there's a million of them. If you're really good, you'll you're consistent and committed, you'll get there in the end.
I have a friend that's quit her job. Someone who quit the job to do the most niche podcast I have ever heard. And every time I hear this business model, I feel like saying to her, like, do you have friends? And if you do have friends, are they close friends? And are they sort of friends that will tell you, no, do not quit your job for this, because this is absolute lunacy. I'm not close enough to her to say that. But if she had if I told Phil, look, Phil, I'm going to quit my job and do a podcast about, foot fungus infections on my feet. You go, no, you're absolutely nuts. Why would you do
don't
that?
Don't quit your job, JB.
No, honestly,
You can quit your job to start your video foot fetish site.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Now you're talking.
Oh, I mean,
OnlyFans.
That rakes it in. Absolutely rakes it in. But, that's the equivalent of what this lady's trying to do. I'm thinking, Jesus, this is nuts. This is absolutely nuts. Before we go on to any more rugby,
I mean, there is a podcast in documenting people that quit their careers to start niche podcasts.
Oh, I tell you what, a podcast reviewing new podcasts would be brilliant. Like, what is this?
Like a sort of a Dragon's Den podcast fashion, but when people have already started and given up everything to do it.
How did this guy go broke? The podcast series. Show me what happened. Before we go on to any more professional rugby, I want to know your views on this. So, local rugby. Talk H play in the ADM leagues. The ADM leagues have got 3 levels to them. So just to give you, put this into context, this is Cheshire and Lancashire, primarily, that play in the ADM leagues.
And you voluntarily took yourself out of the RFU structure.
Yeah. Now, I don't agree with why we did it, because I think it really screws over the Cumbrian teams. And it's not a big ask for us to go up there 3 times a year when they have to do it every other week. So, on record, I don't like it from that point of view, because, well, we all need to play, right? We've all got to play, and we need to suck it up and go to Cumbria. And also, it's fun to be on a coach with your mates, but that's a different discussion. So the ADM leagues have got 3 tiers to them. And to put that into context, North Wales Rugby used to only have 2. I think it has just about 3. So the whole of North Wales has as many teams as the ADMs. Now, it's got to a stage that there is not a single team in Cheshire or Lancashire who is in the RFU structure below level 7, though.
Okay.
Every single team has moved from the RFU.
To ADM.
Yeah, it's absolutely mad. I'm not sure how...
Do you know... So I'm just going to dovetail very briefly across. Yeah. This might explain something. I might get... Oh, what the heck, I'm going to say it anyway. So, the Lancashire Cup at junior level, and, I help coach my son's under-14 team. The Lancashire Cup at junior level has been a bit of a farce this year. The structure's weird. No one knows what's going on, whatever. So a few clubs got together and said, let's try and, for next year, get some meaningful games and a competition with some local sides, make it a bit of a Greater Manchester thing. Got a lot of good clubs around, a lot of good players. Let's have, say, 8 teams that play in a round robin system, everyone plays each other, and then we have a finals day with playoffs and that kind of thing under the lights, make a bit of an event of it. And we had 8 clubs going, I'm well up for that.
Yeah.
The Lancashire Rugby Union found out about it and have kicked off.
Really?
Yeah.
For what reason?
I kind of think, what's this, nothing to do with them? What you do in your weekends?
No.
In your free weekends. But anyway, but this might be part of the backdrop that they feel like they're losing control of
I think they probably
sides.
Are because I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's very fair on the RFU because they've got to look after the whole of the UK of England, not just Northwest and Cheshire. But it comes to something, doesn't it, when every single team has left the RFU structures and literally
is this happening elsewhere? Do you think Would you know?
I don't know.
Yeah, is ADM so? Just Lancashire and Cheshire?
I honestly don't even know what ADM stands for.
And Cumbria. Yeah.
I don't know.
Do they have parallel leagues anywhere else? Yeah.
No, idea.
Don't know.
No idea. I just know that these leagues that I play in. And the other thing which disappointed me this year, and I've spoken about it before, same as you've spoken about, is the Cup. The Cup's not been taken seriously at all. So we think that we should play every Cup game possible. Like Broughton Park have conceded a Cup game. Now, they didn't have the weekends to play it, allegedly, but play it on a Friday. You know, find some time to play it.
So I'll just put a thing out, because rather than make it just about our neck of the woods, I'd be interested to know if there's other sort of political battles going on in other parts, if this is a general thing or just very localised.
Well, I have an idea for Cups. I think you're going to love it. I think you're going to love it. So the Cup just isn't very exciting at the moment. It's kind of, it's grinding away at your league, and then the Cup comes up, and you think, oh, God, sometimes you take it as a week off, sometimes you use it as an opportunity to rotate the squad, bigger bench, you try some second teamers in, or whatever it may be. I think every team does that. How about this? So with teams pulling out because they don't think it's very good, and in some cases, here's another one, some of the teams do not pay the players to play cup games, so you don't see like Rosendale or Preston play Broughton Park or Burnage, because it's just not worth their time. So start the season, you ask your whole squad, do you want to play the Cup? And if they say yes, each player has to pay a fee. Make it £30 per player. All of these players who nominate themselves for the squad are the only players that are available to play. And all of that money goes into a central pot. All of the other teams that want to come into the league, all their players pay too. And at the end of it, I reckon you'd have a pot of about £3,000 or £4,000. And the winner gets to distribute the prize money between the whole team. And the only people that can play from your club are the people that paid in at the start. Imagine.
It's a bit like a poker tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, and it's not going to work quite as well with kids' games. But I think for adult rugby.
Well, that's kind of effectively what we do with our Egg Chaser 17, because we're that good. We just put in our money to play and then just take the winnings.
Oh, I mean, we won £500. £300 from one tournament, £200 from another tournament. And it's awesome to be able to drink someone else's money. But can you imagine how excited people would be? Like, you're not just going to win a trophy. You're going to win a lot of money. I mean, can you run the numbers on this, Phil? Say 16 teams, squads of 20 people paying £30.
£600 a team times 16, £6,000 and...
£9,600.
Yeah,
Christ, 10 grand.
You wouldn't be going on your spa weekend for Cup Day, or going to IKEA. You'd be strapping on your boots. I think this is, in fact, I've got some sway. I might mention this.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to mention just before we get back to the main thing. I'm going to say one of the most consequential and meaningful games in all of the rugby league pyramid is happening on Saturday, and it is in the Northwest. And it's between in National 1, it's Coldy versus Sale.
Yeah.
Oh. And the way the league is poised, Coldy played 27 in a 28-game season, played 27, 107 points.
Yeah.
Sale played 26, 100 points. So if Sale win, even if they win, they might, and Coldy could get losing bonus points. Point being, if Sale win, it's going to be theirs to lose on the final day. Coldy have got this as their final game against Sale.
Really?
Yeah.
So are they Hayward Road or are they?
It's at Coldy.
At Coldy.
I might even watch it.
I was going to suggest possibly going to watch it.
I've got nothing else to do on Saturday. Now you're at the Cup. Yeah.
So keep an eye on Coldy v Sale, because that is going to be some match.
To get up
to the Championship.
I'm just looking at their points for and points against.
Very similar, isn't it?
Near identical. Against Coldy, 529, Sale, 528. There's 1 point difference against, and for Coldy, 539, and Sale, 5.
So Coldy win the league if they win. Sale take it to the final day when they will be in the box seat to win the league if they win.
Crikey.
Wow.
Do you have any preference?
Does Tom Brady still play?
He does still play.
Sale FC,
Brady's still there. Now, Jack Metcalf playing on the wing for most of the season. He's been promoted up to the first team now.
Fergus Mulcrone's been
playing. Fergus Mulcrone.
Nev Edwards.
Nev was playing. I don't know if he still is, though. He definitely was there.
Anyway, keep an eye on that, because that's a hell of a fixture.
Yeah.
Well spotted, that one.
Tasty.
Do you have any preference of who you'd like to win that one? I'm kind of fond of both teams, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't mind. Given that
Championship games round the corner from Phil's house would be pretty cool.
Hayward Road's only, well, it's definitely less than a mile from my front door. So that's quite nice.
Championship teams like Cornish Pirates coming up to Hayward Road.
That's pretty cool.
Bloody brilliant, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I do have a lot of respect for Coldy.
Mm.
You know, Coldy Ravers.
They're called the Ravers. They've had a hell of a season, obviously. They've, you know, I don't know. It's a tough one.
I don't know. I've not played at Coldy for 5-6 years. Their facilities weren't always the best.
Yeah.
Compared to some Championship clubs.
I tell you what, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I don't know what the Championship criteria is, but if they even have one, but Coldy must be.
They might have spent a lot of money recently, but the facilities were certainly pretty limited. Little wooden clubhouse
up on the hill, isn't it?
Yeah, top of the hill.
Well,
and the hill is pretty sick because it's windy out that way.
It's sandy somehow. I don't know why. I always think it's very sandy there.
And there's a good old slant to the pitch as well.
There is. Yeah. Well, let's just hope the best team wins.
Absolutely.
Right, final one. Teams. Just while we're off Top Rugby, I just emailed from Ben Tucker. contactedchasers@gmail.com. Love the podcast, blah, blah, blah. To move us away from the CrossFit loving with JB and Tim, can Phil give us more details about the Vietnamese feast he mentioned a few weeks back? What is his go-to banh mi recipe? Any tips or suggestions?
I would say, actually, so the recipe that I use for my banh mi is...
Sorry, banh mi.
Banh mi is from... what the hell is it called? My vegan cookbook. Vegan street food. Vegan street food, which I don't do a vegan version. I replace the tofu with pork belly, and I use proper pate, Brussels pate. But it's from Jackie Carney, who did the catering at our wedding, and she used to live in Chorlton. She used to live on the same street as us in Chorlton. So... that is a very good recipe book for Southeast Asian street food.
Cool.
The banh mi recipe replaced the tofu with pork. And there's an excellent, excellent jackfruit rendang, but replace the jackfruit with beef brisket and slow cook it for 24 hours.
Mm.
It's vegan street food by Jackie Carney is worth it for those two recipes alone. Absolutely awesome.
Or just Google them.
Or just Google them. Yeah. No, buy the book.
Buy the book.
Jackie Carney, vegan street food.
Yeah.
Mm. There we go. Anyway, so I didn't want to depart Harlequins, albeit they're out, just by marvelling at some of their attacking play.
The Marchant try
was outrageous.
How good was Caden Murley for that?
He was
brilliant. He's a brilliant player.
Very good assist. Good composure.
There's so much that Caden Murley does that you would show to kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he just does the basics beautifully well. And that was a great example.
Yeah, yeah.
At full tilt, he hit the line, made that break, and at full tilt, just real simple things, drift in to make the defender come onto you, and then give the pass.
So simple, isn't it?
And he also timed the pass and his line perfectly, so the covering, either winger or fullback, had no option but to collide with Caden Murley. So there was no chance that he was getting to Marchant because he's on the floor as Marchant strolls in. So that was very good. I mean, he's four tries behind Lewis Leiner in the last two games, but apart from that...
We missed something in this game, something massive. The return of Will Evans, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, I hope his injury's not bad.
Oh, no, he didn't get injured again, did he?
Yeah.
Went off after 40 minutes.
So I didn't see. I only saw the first half. But I was watching. I was thinking, this guy looks. He looked just as good as before we got injured.
Agreed.
Oh, I'm really, really dejected now.
Yeah.
How did he get injured?
I don't know, I don't know exactly. I don't know the extent, or I don't know the nature of the injury. But I know that
it wasn't a leg.
Luke Wallace came on. It was lower half.
I don't know.
And Luke Wallace came on in the second half. But you're right. It was good to see him back, and he's hoping it's not
serious.
It's not serious.
Ben Kay describes him for small defence as the best he's ever seen. I mean, he's not even known for his mauling.
Small defence, yeah. But,
there we go. He was turning over ball, and he was carrying hard. He just looked absolutely superb. And, spoke too soon then. Yeah.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Carl Brewster, I gather, was probably a Quins fan. He said, how many penalties from scrums before you finally give a penalty try?
That 10-minute section I mentioned earlier, which I forced the yellow card, and you do think that something should have happened, something more should have happened sooner than it did.
Yeah. There we go. Munster Exeter, then, that was another titanic tussle over two legs.
Yeah. Pretty upset Exeter didn't make it through because I want them to do good things. I always want them to do good things. And they didn't, but as far as European matchups go, this is, for me now, an absolute classic. I think it comes down to something which Phil said before, just not taking your points. And also, they just didn't seem to be hard enough or streetwise enough. Yeah, it's a hard, difficult one extra moment.
What's odd, because you can't put it just down to that law change and the fact that it's harder to go over close range. You can't put it down just down to that. Exeter are oddly blunt in the final third. Their approach play is amazing. And they got to the outside and had real success getting Woodburn and O'Flaherty through. And they got into the 22 so many times, and they just, their conversion rate, what do they call it? Red zone efficiency, where it's the points per entry to the 22. And Exeter's, when they won the championship a couple of years ago, it was like every 2.6 points per visit to the 22. And on this occasion against Munster, it was 0.6. Or 0.5. Wow. Yeah.
And I think that's probably across both games as well.
Yeah, so it's interesting how they measure efficiency there, because it's every time they score in the 22. Another thing I'd be worried about for Exeter is not so much their efficiency of how often they score, but how quickly that they score when they have the ball there. So they used to go through 20-odd phases in order to score, which was fine. Now they're trying to do that, but they just aren't retaining the ball. They're just not as effective. There's another element to Exeter as well that I think might be affecting them, which is when you become a really good team, people start taking notes of your players. So they're going to lose a lot of players this year, and that's going to be very disruptive for any team environment. So Hill's going, Armand has been, he's announced that he's now retiring.
I don't know if many people understand that, but so Leicester Tigers have already done their salary cap adjustments.
Yeah.
They're already set. And Exeter, the salary cap adjustments from 6.4 down to 5 million haven't yet taken effect.
Yeah,
they grandfathered them.
Exactly. They will this summer. So Exeter are not going to get a better... They will never have a better opportunity to be as good as right now.
Same with Sale Sharks. Sale Sharks are in exactly the same boat, and they could actually be in a worse boat in some respects. So, yeah, for Exeter, think about the turmoil going on internally. So Johnny Hill is leaving.
Yeah.
Sam Skinner.
Sam Skinner is going. Sean Lonsdale is
Tom
going.
O'Flaherty.
Tom O'Flaherty's signed elsewhere. Is there another one?
I'm not sure.
I think scrum off, what's his name? Hidalgo Klein is going, if not already gone. Don Armand has retired. So there's an awful lot of turbulence there behind the scenes, I think. Now, they'll know how to handle it, but you know, it is still really difficult to turn around a squad, particularly one which is so successful and relies on teamwork as much as Exeter. So I think there's a few things going on there which they're going to have to overcome.
They've also had more international call-ups over the past couple of seasons. Correct. And that, if you look at LCD and Jack Noel, that playing more games and more higher-intensity games leads to more injuries, therefore greater unavailability. Therefore, you end up having...
Compounds.
Yeah, you're having weaker players or not your preferred players.
It wouldn't surprise me if we start seeing more teams like Exeter, who do really well one year, look at their squad, they go, right, our time to win is now. They'll have a bunch of contracts which they can afford. They'll try and extend a few more. And the worst case scenario for this is the ones that they extend then start to decline as they've extended them. And the ones which they can't extend because of cap room then have to leave. Mm. And then you go from first all the way down to fifth or sixth. I mean, you can see that happening with Leicester Tigers because, God, everyone must be interested in Martin, and everyone must be interested in Chesham, and everyone must be interested in
Tommy Rafael.
Everyone must be.
Yeah.
Who's it got? Joe Hayes.
Freddie Stewart.
Dan Kelly.
Yeah. Potter and Porter.
Potter and Porter. Potter.
The two hookers. Yeah. The two hookers who will be.
Dolly
will be paid. He'll be on a contract that's under what his market value now is.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you look at all of these guys, they can't keep them all.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and they'll be valued higher because they're successful.
And they're already losing arguably their best two players, or certainly two of their best players, in Ford and Genge.
Mm. So expect to see, I think we're going to see a lot more teams. Like, and if they're well run, hopefully the rot will stop about fifth or sixth whilst they regather their thoughts. But I think it's going to happen a lot. Sale will be the next one.
In this game, because Exeter, they could have done more, but Munster, they were very good. Munster, and they were very good to just be an incredibly difficult and disruptive team to break down. And their back row were brilliant.
They were.
O'Donoghue playing at eight, Hodnett and Peter Omani.
How many times does Omani want to do that Undertaker thing of, oh, he's out, he's down, he's injured, boom.
Yeah. Omani, he was deserved man of the match. I thought he was the best player in the park. His line-out work was excellent. He was getting around the park.
How old is he now? How does he keep doing this? 31,
no, he's older 32. Than that, surely.
I'm not sure he
34,
is.
34, 35, I would have said.
You reckon? He'd... Maybe. Yeah, probably right.
Do you know what... It's felt like he's been in his 30s for about 8 years.
Yeah, agreed.
32?
Didn't look 32 when he's dancing on a table in Monaco.
Yeah, that was 4 years ago, though.
They look very 28 then.
Exactly. I thought he was brilliant. He's the breakdown work of that back three. So Munster obviously missing one of the best breakdown tacticians, effectors of the breakdown in the game in Tyburn. That back three more than made up for it. Omani got some incredibly important and opportune turnovers just at the right moment.
Yeah, this timing's amazing, isn't it? You've got to play the referee as you do it.
They did that brilliantly.
French referees are loose.
They are.
They let it all go. Because I was watching it. I mean, Exeter just got to deal with it. But I would have been just going... Because compared to Premiership...
Massively.
Massively different. It's like, how are they just getting away with this?
Yeah.
Stephen Jones had...
Play the ref.
You've got to play the ref.
They did it brilliantly, Munster.
Stephen Jones had a few things to say about this Georgian ref that's been doing the rounds. He did
one of the games last week and did...
Maybe the Ulster one.
No, it wasn't. Was it? Maybe it was. Yeah, maybe it was the Ulster game last week.
I thought he actually did really well.
Yeah.
I have no complaints. I mean...
He had a big call to make last week, made it, and then allowed the game to flow and...
I can't help but think the only reason that he probably targeted the Georgian ref is because he's from Georgia. But I actually thought, in the big games, I thought he refed well. I thought the game was not affected by him.
Yeah.
Well, like you say, you've got to manage the game, and French refs are loose as you like. And I actually thought that it benefited Ulster, because I was, before the Ulster-Toulouse game, this isn't to go back to over that game, it's just to make the point that different nations, and you have to manage it. I think Ulster benefited from the fact it was an English team of referees because they were very
Matt Carley.
Quick on the breakdown, and so Toulouse didn't compete nearly as much, and certainly nowhere near as much as Munster did.
Yeah, yes. Matt Carley was really good. I remember
he was good.
Now, why am I thinking this? I'm just thinking back about how I felt at the time watching Carley. He did something which really impressed me, but I can't remember for life.
It was Mike Lowry going up for the catch.
Yes, it was. Yeah, because this is...
So it was their fullback, what's his face?
Ramos.
Ramos, catch. Lowry appeared at first glance like he'd taken him out in the air, like Balakoon did.
Mm-hmm.
And Lowry was underneath, but did get off the ground. And actually, in the freeze frame that the team were at TMO, who was Ian Tempest, and Matt Carley between them, freeze framed it. And you could see that Mike Lowry's hand, although he was below Ramos, and Ramos did land awkwardly, Mike Lowry's hand was pretty much near the ball.
Yeah, so so this is how I thought it was going to go. And this is all credit to Matt Carley. Matt Carley is the most precise referee out there.
He is.
It doesn't mean he's the best. It just means he's most precise. Because you know, when he sees things, he's very particular about how he plays the laws.
Wayne Barnes was the ref last week, Ulster. Toulouse, so it wasn't that game. Yeah. It might have been the one where there was that massive the red card that was given or wasn't.
I've got it in front. I'll tell you, it was the Claremont Leicester Tigers game last week.
Yeah.
So, anyway, sorry.
Yeah, so the first yellow card to Balakoon, you can hear the officials talking, and it sounds sensible what they're saying. He's not looking where he's going, therefore it's reckless. You can't really argue with that. That said, when they're assessing the Mike Lowry one, they're saying he is looking where he's going. I thought, oh my God, they're not going to give him a red card for the exact opposite thing that they said about Balakoon only 40 minutes before. And they didn't. They actually used some common sense. Said, look, he's looking at the ball. It's a contest in the air. I thought, oh my God.
And it wasn't even that there was no yellow card. There was no penalty. It was accidents an happen, yeah. Play on.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Yeah.
There was one which was a penalty this week which blew my mind. It must have been Stade, I think. It was the Stade Racing game. Right. So it looks for all the world as if this player has taken out a kicker late or a catch without the ball, something like that. It's either a kicker late or it doesn't really matter. One of those two things. And you think, what a fool. What has he done that for? So the penalty's given. I'm like, this has got to be a yellow card. You know, you can't just wipe people out. And they look at it again. And the player says, I've been pushed. And I watch it again. There's no push. Watch it again. Then you realise the scrum half has tripped him up. So the scrum half has tripped the Racing player into the Racing player. So the referee goes, let's have a look at this. Sorry, I'm doing the little TMO sign with my fingers. And
that's the sound of a TMO sign.
And they notice, they go, oh, it's a tangle of legs. And the scrum half clearly tripped him up. I went, oh, well, as it's a tangle of legs,
play
only
on.
A penalty. What, a penalty against a guy who got tripped up? So, like, if you're scrum half now, you go around tripping people up. Like, it should be a penalty yellow card against a scrum half for tripping up the guy, which is dangerous, and putting your own player in danger. I couldn't believe they went from yellow card from
mitigating circumstances.
You've been tripped up by a scrum half who's snickering to himself. So anyway, well done, Matt Carley. I thought it was some great.
Well done, Matt Carley. Well done, Munster. Well done, Joey Carberry. Who had a great game, took his try brilliantly, kicked well. Which it's taken a while for him to get back to his best, but he's looking good.
Yeah, well, difficult injury for a fly off, is it not? Is it wrist?
I think he definitely had a knee issue at one point.
There's a lot of Munster fans and a lot of people in the Irish press who were thinking that, I've forgotten the name of the guy, Ben Healy.
They like him.
Thinking Ben Healy should have been retained as the starter. Vindication from the Munster coaches for the selection, because Joey Carberry was great. And also another well done to friend of the pod, Graham Rowntree. Confirmation of his role as head coach at Munster for next season, which is great.
That is good to see.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Just one last thing about Munster and Irish rugby in general. Do you know when it pans over to Peter Romani and he's on the bench and he looks absolutely knackered after doing one hell of a shift? Do you all think this is the difference between Irish rugby and Welsh rugby? Like, when's the last time you saw a Welsh international have an absolutely epic game in Europe for his club?
Josh Navidi was decent. He was really good against Saracens in the Challenge Cup.
Right. I mean, there is that. I mean, yeah, fair play to Josh Navidi.
Tomos Williams.
Yep. But it's not the real. It's not,
when was the last time a Welsh team played a competitive game in the Champions Cup?
Was the Scarlets play Champions Cup this time round? One of them must have.
Yeah, well, Cardiff beat Toulouse 28-0.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, so. it just doesn't happen. They seem to, husband their internationals very, very, very carefully. They don't tend to play them. When they do play, they say, kind of half arse it, get out of Europe, and then they don't need to play again for the rest of the season, and they look forward to all their international money. And that's the difference. The Irish players seem to care.
Peter Romani does have that quality that Mako Vanapola also has, where he looks exhausted after 30 seconds or after 80 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. This might be controversial, but I think a lot of the Irish teams, a lot of the Irish players, would be equally as proud to play for Munster or Leinster or Connacht or Ulster as they would for Ireland. Maybe not quite so much, but I think the gap between the amount of pride they have in that province shirt and their national shirt is a lot closer than, say, the Welsh boys. A lot closer.
I don't doubt that at all. And the gap outside of international test match rugby, a game in the Champions Cup involving one of those sides is about as close to it as you get.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of intensity and quality.
Yeah, it's just a shame they're in such a dreadful league. Well, actually, it's not for them, because that's how they're so good, you know, the rest of the time.
Yeah, and just looking back to when a Welsh team last played the knockout stages.
It was Scarlets against La Rochelle.
Scarlets played last year, but not against La Rochelle.
Oh, don't know then.
They got hammered 57-14 against Sale.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, the last time they won in the knockouts was against La Rochelle.
Okay, when was that?
That would be a couple of years ago.
A few years ago.
It's actually, they had a really decent team. It's a Pivic team, I think.
They did have a good Pivic team for a few years. Very quick
discussion on along the lines of, seeing as you were talking about red cards and decisions and refereeing and stuff, a lot of chat about a 20-minute red card or the orange card.
Oh, my word. The first time I tweeted in maybe a month was about this. Some clown decided that he'd write a tweet to Bill Beaumont. I don't know if you saw this. We do not want to see a player replaced after 20 minutes after the red card from the fans.
Yours sincerely, the fans.
Yeah, the fans. Oh, really? Oh, really? You speak for all of us now. Like, some of the hubris is unbelievable. And I can say this as a hubristic man myself. I love the idea. Absolutely love it. And I don't care what message it sends. Health and safety is not first and foremost. It's not the priority. It's not any of those things. The number one thing about rugby is entertainment and the quality of the game. If it wasn't, we wouldn't play it. If safety was our number one concern, you wouldn't even look at a pair of boots. It's just the most. If anyone says that, they have the IQ of an Alsatian. Right, it's just not what the priority is. So a 20-minute red card, I don't care if it doesn't send the message or what have you. I think it's fine. In fact, I think it'd be an ideal solution to what I think is a growing problem within rugby.
The one element I like about it is the fact it draws a distinction between grievous foul play, like a stamp or a punch, and a miscalculation that, like taking someone out in the air because you just mistimed it and you didn't mean to do anyone any harm. You could get a red card for it, but that's not the same as gouging someone or grabbing their bollocks or punching them in the face.
I think it doesn't really matter what the offence is. If it's a red card, you go off. 20 minutes later, someone else comes on for you. I'm happy with that. And including...
Oh, no, I would draw a distinction. I think the purpose is it draws a distinction between... The red card's still a red card, but there would be something in the middle which is... That's bad enough that you need to go off. 20 minutes is the punishment, and you can't return to the field.
Oh, yeah, I don't think anyone who has...
Red card is 14 men for the rest of the game.
Oh, okay.
That's how I would do it. I wouldn't necessarily...
You'd still retain it for the...
That's what I like. You could pass out between...
Yeah. I mean, look, if we see gouging or extreme foul play like that, let's deal with it off the
field. Or a clothesline high tackle.
Yeah, deal with it off the field and make sure it involves money. People will soon change their minds then, because all these guys are professionals. Money is probably the biggest threat that you can give them, taking away their paychecks for, you know, however many games. That is the best way to do it. As for the integrity of the game as it's been played, rugby's done a pretty good job actually of sort of adjusting to limited numbers. It does do that, you know, 14 men, I don't like it. I know you don't mind it, Phil, but 14 men makes you very susceptible to having 13 men then, and then everything crumbles.
Yeah, I mean, we did see two teams win this weekend with 14 men.
Which were...
Sale,
yep.
Lost Reed after 30 minutes.
That's right.
And Leicester.
Yeah, and Sale had Chisholm. A second yellow card, didn't they?
They did, they were down to 13 men at one point.
They went down to 13 and they started conceding. So, you know, yeah, that's the danger.
Oh, well, you mentioned before the growing problem in our game. What do you mean?
Yeah, so in my mind, it's a problem when I'm watching Ulster to lose and one team has a red card and the other team has two yellows. I just don't want to see limited number rugby. I want to see what the coaches and players have been working on all week, which is their systems, their processes, their lineouts, you know, how do they create the space with 15 on 15. I am sort of softening up to it. You know, if it becomes a feature, well, it is now a feature. It just seems like, I don't know, it just seems like a not disproportionate, but there's a factor in a game where you start removing players either temporarily or permanently through reds and through reds and yellows. And the effect on the outcome, I think, it's just too great all that period.
I think I've got to the bottom of why this might suddenly become a thing, because Super Rugby have been... I didn't realise they're trialling the 20-minute red card. And we got an email from Ben Askham, who says, so a lot of hot takes on Twitter about how a recent spate of red cards in Super Rugby proves, in capital letters, exclamation mark, that the 20-minute red card law encourages dangerous play.
There we go.
To demonstrate that correlation doesn't mean causation, let's look at the past weekend in the Champions Cup. 3 red cards in 8 games, plus Jameson Gibson-Park, who could have easily seen red. Mm-hmm. There have been 42 games of Super Rugby Pacific so far this season, and 9 red cards. Is the controversy I saw on Twitter, therefore, an example of the Texas sharpshooter fallacy?
What is that?
Well, I know. Can you look up Texas sharpshooter fallacy?
I've not heard of that.
I know the Bret Hart sharpshooter fallacy.
Was it just one bad weekend where they had 4 red cards across the 5 games on the weekend of the 1st, 2nd and April? Says Ben, love the pod, blah, blah, blah. Mm. Could well be.
So, Texas sharpshooter fallacy is logical fallacy based on the metaphor of a gunman shooting the side of a barn, then drawing targets around the bullet hole cluster to make it look like he hit the target. Illustrates how people look for similarities, ignoring differences, and do not account for randomness.
Say that again?
So I quite like that.
So you shoot.
So you shoot the side of the barn.
Yeah.
And then you draw a target around where the shots have clustered.
Ah.
So it's like the old, the Spotify problem of randomness.
Oh yeah, I know this one.
So Spotify. So there's a very good book called The Hot Hand that I read last year about basketball, but one of the chapters was on Spotify, and Spotify. When they first... there's another book that I read called Humble Pie, which is totally separate, but doing randomness in computers, which are binary, is very difficult. It's really difficult to actually get true randomness other than like a lottery machine that is a real-world physical object that is truly random.
Mm-hmm.
Roulette machine, truly random. Roulette wheel. But Spotify thought, well, they didn't think they'd solved it, but they got something that was very close to true random within digital technology. That means, the problem with that is, if you've got a playlist of 100 songs and you've got 5 songs by one artist, in a truly random world, you will get 3 of those 5 songs played after each other. Every now and again, you'll see patterns, and humans pick up patterns. We're terrible for picking up patterns, even when they don't exist. So Spotify, they had so many complaints at the true randomness of their playlist that they changed it to a fake random playlist that is far less random in order to stop people seeing patterns that weren't there.
Yeah. So, if you had subsequent songs twice, or the same song twice.
Or the songs by the same artist 3 times in a row, because you've got 5 of songs by one artist in a 100-song playlist.
That's with this interview with Russ Roberts.
The name of the writer of The Hot Hand is Ben Cohen.
That's it.
But it's a New York Times.
Not the Ben Cohen.
Not the rugby Ben Cohen.
That would be total randomness.
Something in what you say then, Ben, in your email. I would also say it's probably an example of cognitive dissonance where people lurking on Twitter, desperate
to prove,
with an agenda ready to go,
yeah,
that when there's a new thing with a 20-minute red card, which they hate because they think it means that we don't care about the health welfare of people.
It's fascinating.
And then on the one weekend when there's a bunch of red cards, see proof.
Yeah, well,
close the book.
I've come to a conclusion now. I nearly put up a tweet today just saying, bye, dickheads, as my final tweet, and then close my account, because I've not tweeted for about four weeks. Just that.
Just that.
And then go. I'm going to leave it open for now. But it has dawned on me that the majority of people tweeting from so-called rugby accounts are people who just do not play rugby.
They
whatever they're using it for is something completely different. And one of the signing things is how seriously they can take safety. It's tiring. It's tiring and boring.
What more's the point, mate? How much more productive stuff have you done with the time you haven't been spending there?
None. No, no, that's not true. I've been doing quite...
You've been doing ring dips.
Yeah.
Pull-ups.
Yeah, yeah, my pull-up game is strong at the moment.
That's the one judgment I would probably... No, that's cruel to say so. No. But no, but a lot of the people that you're probably talking, describing...
They're obese. The most of them are obese and don't play rugby. They're just everywhere. Bodies everywhere. They're absolutely awful.
That wasn't the point I was making.
Yeah, yeah, well, like, that's the point I'm making.
I don't mind the 20-minute red card. I also don't mind the red card as it is now, because I don't think it ruins games. Although I do take the point that it's the compounding of cards.
Yeah,
two men off is a lot worse than just having one. It's proportionally a lot worse than just having one. But the bit I hate about this is that tweet that I only saw it because I don't go on Twitter very much. I only saw it because one of our friends messaged it to
us.
That tweet, sincerely, the fans. That is so horribly arrogant and condescending to anyone that disagrees. It is
the
such
fans.
A...
Oh, okay, really?
My God. So I don't mind. 20 minutes, I'd be fine with that. Keep it as it is, I'd be fine with that. So, I don't think either will have a significant material effect on the game.
So back to cards, right? Do you see a Stade Français Paris game?
I saw bits. I didn't watch the full.
Like, if this is what top 14 is like, mainline it into my veins. It's brilliant. So the winger for Stade Français, whatever his name is, he gets a yellow card. He then gets a second yellow card, resulting in a red card. But in my mind, that is a straight red. And I was watching this like, this is actually a good card to give away, because if anyone's going to get a red card, probably best be him, because
he's already wiped the slate clean.
Yeah, so like, he's going to commit an offence. He's got a choice now, a yellow card offence or a red card offence, but they both end up the same thing, so just go wild, why not? Which is exactly what he did. But there's a certain injustice there. So if I was the ref, I'd go, okay, he's had a yellow card, he's now got a red card. So, Captain, can you choose another player to go off for 10 minutes? we can't be having this sort of getting away with stuff. Or what if you just gave the yellow cards to the other team?
What's the opposition?
Just dish them out however
you want. No. So what you do, right, is...
So there you go, Finn Russell. Who do you want to give it to?
Yeah.
It's like the club call.
Yeah. So Phil high tackles you, clothesline, yellow card. But instead of giving the yellow card to Phil, you run over and you give it to the opposition coach.
Give it to me. On the floor, just being walloped. Do I want to take revenge on that guy? Or actually, even more of a slight, it's like... No, you stay on the field. Yeah. I'm going to give it to him.
So one of my
and I'm going to get you.
Yeah.
One of my favourite defensive drills to play when I'm coaching is sort of playing semi-contact touch or whatever it is, or good grab. And if someone misses a tackle, the game stops, and the team that missed the tackle all do burpees, except for the guy that missed the tackle, because he's not allowed to work. He's got to watch all of his mates work, because that's what missed tackles do. They make everyone else work on your behalf, that's like drill sergeant stuff. Proper old school blanket punishment. You stand there, and all of your mates can do burpees for you, and you can count them. It's the same effect by giving the card to the coach. So you give it to the opposition coach. So Aaron Reed has hit this guy high.
Right.
And they hand the...
Moynihan.
Yeah. So they hand Pat Lam the red card. Red card, you play it immediately. But if it's like a couple of yellow cards that Pat Lam's got in his back pocket and the game's getting close and then he plays his two yellow cards, I'll have John O'Ross off. And they'll have faff off. Cheers.
A bit like a power play.
Power play in the back pocket.
I quite like that.
Yeah. Yellow card. So then you just...
You could do that with the team offence ones.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I feel sorry when like someone trots on as the sub. The sub prop. The team have given away 6 penalties in a row. Right, next one, you're done. Prop runs on. Bang. Penalty, yellow card, you're off.
I've been on 10 seconds.
Yeah.
That's good.
Team offence, yellow card, just trot it over to Pat Lam. Pat Lam will go, here you go.
Let's talk about Pat Lam and Alex Anderson then.
Oh, well, where do we start with these two?
So it was categorically the worst game last week.
Yep.
This week was highly entertaining, if unpredictable and erratic, shall we say?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really interesting coaching matchup for a start. I mean, obviously, Pat Lam's... whole thing is they run on love. Sale bought a neuro
psychologist
in. Can anyone tell me what one does?
I can't.
Well, so
Phil, Tim, sorry.
So the neuropsychologist part is no. I'm wondering if this is to do with like because like neurolinguistic programming is massive.
Okay.
NLP and like, but that's like language and. But that's more about language and how it can. But I don't think that's what a neuropsychologist is. It's just I think neuro. I don't think that because psychology is brain anyway. So I don't think the neuro. I think
that's exactly what
like,
I thought.
It's like going when people go
brain.
Pin number.
Number. That's exactly what I thought. So apparently, he's one of the world's leading guys, and he wanted to talk about the awareness of effects on oxytocin and dopamine.
Oh, okay. So he's looking at the brain on a sort of chemical level.
I don't know what I do with that information. Do you? Like, we've got some scrimmage. How is my dopamine?
How do I get some more dopamine?
Yeah,
I scroll through Twitter before this scrum?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my likes are up. Dopamine hit. Let's go. I mean, it's very interesting, no doubt. I just don't know how it applies.
How is it relatable?
I guess being aware of your feelings and how it can affect your behaviour.
That's
another way of going down the mindfulness route, isn't it? Like being I can sense myself feeling anxious, and I'm going to be. But the fact that I'm aware of it means I'm going to proactively manage it rather than just giving in to those base human feelings of shouting at someone.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly understand what you're saying. I certainly appreciate the meaning behind it. I think I just think it's nonsense. and the reason if your job is just go in the field and pick some corn, right? It doesn't matter if you're happy or sad. Just get in the field and pick some corn. You know, I think the more things that you're aware of, the more it's like adding more problems that you don't need to solve. Like Jesus,
if someone wanted to just soundbite that a couple of sentences, that is just. Like vintage JB. I really thoroughly appreciate what you're saying and the point you're trying to make. I just think it's nonsense.
But the beauty of Alex Anderson, right, and I've learned this, he doesn't need to convince me. He doesn't need to convince anybody except for the players in the dressing room. As long as his players are convinced that whatever this stuff is that he's introducing to them, as long as they believe that, it's absolutely fine. This is exactly
placebo effect.
Yeah, it's basically a placebo effect. Problem is, if they start losing or if people start asking questions, I think it might come undone rapidly.
I listened to an amazing podcast about which was talking about the placebo effect and how massive it is.
Yeah,
it's huge. And the nocebo effect as well.
What's the nocebo effect?
I can't remember now. Doesn't matter. But that was one. Anyway, it was really, really interesting. But the power of the placebo effect is to the extent that you can just completely kid your body and have actual outcomes.
And you can kid so many people. So there is a coach.
No, but you can have actual
physiological responses.
Just based on
isn't
that you can kid your body into thinking it.
Yeah,
it's the same. You can like hypochondriacs can think themselves ill.
Yeah,
yeah. It's basically homeopathy 101. Yeah. So embarrassingly about homeopathy, and this is absolutely humiliating. I used to suffer from migraines. That's not humiliating. The only person to ever solve one of my migraines was a homeopath, and to this day I resent it. Like, because I know it's not true.
I wish I had those migraines back.
I wish my head was pounding, I couldn't see out my eyes. So she gave me a bloody sugar pill, and it went. I couldn't believe it. So, yeah. Yeah, it went. So, yeah, I know it's nonsense. I have no truck with homeopathy whatsoever.
But the homeopath there wasn't saying this sugar pill is going to solve it. She was saying,
solve it yourself.
She was basically going, I'm going to make you solve it. I'm going to make your body. I'm going to trick your body into doing it itself.
Yeah, success. I'm more stupid than I look.
More susceptible.
More susceptible to nonsense. Yeah. So back to coaching, right? And placebo effect in coaching. You are absolutely right. So I know of a coach, and I won't say his name, but he's not very well thought of in coaching communities, although he's very high profile. And I was speaking to somebody who actually ran the club, and he was saying, yeah, well, you know, the rugby IQ we have in the rugby department with person X is just off the scale. You know, in rugby, if you can convince everybody that you know things and everyone buys into your system, even if your system's wrong, I think 80% of rugby is just convincing everyone to do the same thing. If everyone's doing the same thing, even like look at Pat Lam's system. It is not the best system for the Premiership. But if everyone does it, it's bloody good. It's just not really the best system.
Yeah.
And last year, everyone was doing it.
Yep. This year, maybe not. And, you know, even if everyone does it, the team with the better system, I mean, that's the difference, isn't it? At the very top level, then the systems matter. But if you just need to get 80% of people to, all people
do the right thing. Do something close to the right thing at the right time and all buy into it.
Sale had enough of the thing that does make, is this X factor, just blunt force. They had enough of that to make a difference. Those Dupree twins were wrecking balls.
So blunt. And I think my view is Sale are sort of in the same mould as Toulouse, which is a placeholding. Like, they know they've got to... It's sort of a mixture of Toulouse and Exeter, I guess. They're going to have to change up squad drastically. They're bringing in new faces. That means people are going to have to leave. Faf has already left. Lude is...
Yeah, but it's like Lude's gone, but Johnny Hill's coming in. But
Lude might not go now, allegedly.
No. Well, the talk is he is. But anyway, let's assume he does.
Yeah.
Lude and JP Dupree go, but Johnny Hill coming in. I'm all right with that. Faf's going.
Raffy's pretty good.
AJ's going. George Ford's coming in. I don't think it's that bad.
No, it's actually...
Tom O'Flaherty, he who shall not be named on the wing's gone. Yeah. Tom O'Flaherty's coming in.
Yeah, so in terms of all that, the placeholding's in. I think what they think is round the corner is going to be awesome. You know, in a few months' time, it's going to be awesome. And in the meantime, let's just win our games. And they're sort of placeholding in that. You know, they're not playing a particularly attractive style. There's much more to come from this team.
I'm probably going to double down on Sale next year and pick them as my champions.
Yeah,
but
which I
did this year.
They need just a little bit more, don't they? I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on what it is that they need. But they need something more.
They need George Ford.
They need George Ford, and they need Sam. I mean, I think Sam James at 13 makes one hell of a difference because he's so creative. And he played really, really well this game. In fact, he reminded me exactly why I love Sam James so much. He's an absolutely brilliant player. So he makes an enormous difference. I think this Sale team is the best equipped to go to Paris and beat up Parisians. I just do. I mean, who else would you choose?
Leicester.
Didn't they? Was it so last season they played La Rochelle. The season before, did they not play Racing?
Maybe.
In the quarterfinals.
Quite possible. Oh,
And then it was Saracens in Racing in the semi-final.
Possible.
I might have that wrong.
I just think that I think it's a matchup that works. I think the first choice Sale pack, if they got all of their names out firing fit for that game, they would be it'd be one hell of a contest. And once they win it up front, and I have no doubt that they can and that they will. There again, looking at some of the specimens that Racing have just in their front row. Agoma Sarr is a special looking human. I mean, he's just magnificent. and then you've got Camille Schatz.
Camille Schatz is also a unique looking human.
Yeah,
he's incredible.
Eddie Benaroos a few years ago was one of the best loose heads on the planet. Yep. You don't even talk about him now. And then they've got Trevor. No, it's not. It's Ox.
Naya Keane.
Han.
Trevor Nyakane.
Trevor Nyakane, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not as if they're short up front.
No.
Yeah.
They've got. I think it's a game too far for say. It's interesting because I watched the highlight show with it's Austin Healey and Delalio, and they were both. I think they both said Racing, but they were kind of saying that they think Leicester have got. Leicester. They think Sale have got a good shot at this.
I completely agree with them.
I'm not so sure. I just don't think they're playing that good of rugby at the moment.
No, that is their downfall. I mean, personnel, yes. The systems that they're playing and the way they're playing, it's in fits and starts. So you go back to how they beat Leicester Tigers. That was an awesome game and they played really well. A little bit inconsistent, Sale, but I'm pretty sure they can go to Racing with a full-strength team and turn them over. That Racing team is not particularly big. I mean, I know you said look at those absolute animals, but you know, look at the guys. You know, Wences Lore is what, 6'6" and a bit of change. You know, they're not huge in the back five. Whereas Sale are enormous in the back five.
Sale are enormous in that back five.
You know, and
it's just the, I don't know. I see the matchup of Rob Dupree against Finn Russell, and the two young wingers against
I've not even thought of that. Jesus.
Teddy Thomas and Juan Imhoff. and then Fiku running wild because he's just an
oh my god,
such a supreme specimen.
I actually think Fiku might be one of the best players on the planet, though.
He's so good, Fiku. He's so young as well. Still,
he's brilliant.
He's been playing high level. He's been playing for France for the past 10 years, and he's still only 27.
He was brilliant on the weekend. Like everything he touched was just brilliant. Yeah, Fiku is quite good. There again, you know, Sale are not bad in the senses if Manu's playing and
Manu and Sam James. Yeah,
yeah, you are right. The inexperience on the back three is problematic. The unbelievable Rob Dupreuil at 10. I mean, I just hope he has one of his unbelievable. I just hope he
more like his brothers.
Yeah, yeah, which he will, of course. He'll play exactly like the twins, which is perfect in a way. Just not there.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I don't know what Sale do at Fly Half. They can't play Rob Dupreuil at Paris, can they? Can they?
Is AJ going to be fit?
Kieran Wilkinson?
Talk about it nearer the time, so he was fit.
Yeah.
Got a few weeks. Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
So, did either of you see anything of the La Rochelle-Bordeaux game?
No.
I only saw the highlights this week. It was a good game last week, but...
If I was prioritising games, then that was like one that had no point. La Rochelle have got that.
Yeah. Done. And they did have it. They conclusively won it. There was a Bordeaux red card as well after 25 minutes. That
brilliant.
What
did the fans think?
It did.
Were they happy to see him go?
Happy to see him off for the remainder of the game. It didn't change the course of the game in the slightest.
I did see this. Did I watch it with you? Tigers, Claremont.
Yes.
Yes, we watched it together. Yeah. Over a beer.
We had a nice, very nice Imperial Pastry Sour.
It's very nice, actually. And what was the one we had before that?
That was a Vault City. It was a S Deeper. Ooh. Sour double IPA.
Oh, as we're on the subject, how was your shin beef pasta and your beef Wellington?
Oh, it was good. That was very good. Yeah, the beef Wellington turned out really nicely.
Did they send? Sorry, we'll talk about it later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that fair.
So
we're dedicating a lot of time to what I've been eating on this podcast.
awesome game by Tigers. I think they've really set a stall out.
Tigers was good.
It's got to be said, there are a lot of players for Claremont that were not present.
Yes.
But I'm not sure it makes that much of a difference, to be honest.
No, Leicester were the better team throughout this. They were the better team last week. They were the better team this week. Raka and the fullback,
Tiberian?
Whatever his name is. He played on the wing last week and played fullback this week. They were two of the best players in both encounters, to be frank. Oh, the young number nine, Jeannot, he did a few nice things, nice little break. Obviously pushed Power out from last week.
One Leicester player that has to be mentioned, Harry Potter.
He's playing some really nice stuff.
Mm.
His break for the Freddie Stewart try.
Yes, that was quite cool.
Awesome. But it's not he's just an elusive runner. He makes it look easy. And he just kind of glides past people. He beat four defenders and then offloaded for that Stewart try and made about 50 or 60 yards in doing so. He's doing some very nice things, Potter.
Yeah. Claremont week, I'm very much looking forward to seeing if Tigers can replicate their league form and this last lot of European games form against Leinster. I'd love to see him turn over Leinster. I would love to see that.
We'll talk about it in future weeks. I don't think they will, but I think they will be very, very close.
Do you reckon?
I think that's going to be a very good game.
I can, for some reason, I can see Leinster just blowing them away. I don't want it to happen. I still feel for all the good things that they've done, Leicester, they're a few years off what their peak is going to be.
Well, but will they reach their peak? Because, like we said before, they're going to lose Genge, they're going to lose Ford. Well, they've lost them for next season. They are so important. They are such talented players.
Genge turned into one of the world's premier ball carriers.
Yeah.
From Loosehead, which is brilliant.
From Loosehead and like kick returners as well. Loosehead kick returner.
Imagine having him and Hawker from Saracens.
Scout Brits
in the same side. I can't think of who most tight head would be.
I think they're going to push Leinster very close because they are just so together as a unit, so well organised.
I think they will. I think so. It's at Welford Road,
yeah,
which obviously works in their favour. I think Leicester will push Leinster very close, but I think Leinster will just edge it.
Van Portfleet, I thought, had a very strong game. And it's going to be worth keeping him in mind because at some point Ben Youngs can't continue for England. I don't know when that time is. I mean, I assume he has to go to the World Cup, right?
Well, as long as the one thing has become evident, as long as Eddie Jones is in charge, Ben Youngs will be playing. He's the third choice English scrum half at Leicester Tigers,
yep.
And yet he's the first choice scrum half for England. Make of that what you will.
You can't. We need to pass out the Ben Youngs thing because he's got more caps than any other player.
Anyone.
Yep.
So you don't get that
by accident.
By accident.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's not his fault that Eddie Jones was coach.
Lots of coaches before him did the same thing.
Yeah.
So that needs to be respected in the same way.
You're all right.
In the same way that I hate the way that Owen Farrell is much maligned, and that guy is immense.
Well, he shouldn't have done what he did to Ben Spencer, but nevertheless,
that guy is immense, and his offload for that Max Maidens try was, if Marcus Smith had done that,
or Finn Russell,
you would never hear the end of it.
Yeah, that is true. Did you see the Camille Lopez offload? That was pretty
that was
sexy.
Nice.
Well,
was nice.
It was nice in its inception. I don't think it was as effective as it should be.
It didn't, because then the receiver, was it Moala, received it, immediately gets smothered.
Get flattened.
Yes.
Yeah, so Lopez gets flattened as he throws the pass. And
hospital
then Moala
offload.
But, you know, what a beautiful hospital offload.
Oh, so effective. No, not really.
Not that time.
Yeah. So, yeah, good. Well done, Leicester. They were far, far, far better than Claremont.
Similar to what you said last week. Yeah, good. Well done, Semi-Rondrandra.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't that good. Well, was he that good this week? I don't remember. It didn't matter. I've watched so much rugby. I feel like I've watched so much.
And I also watched, only the highlights, admittedly, but I watched your beloved Blues take down the Crusaders.
Is that not the first time in Christchurch for like 20 years?
First time since Carlos Spencer in 2004.
I'm sure.
And it was a very good game. Someone had a red card as well.
Is that 2004 game when Carlos Spencer scores and dots it in the corner?
Runs into the corner.
That is the best rugby moment of all time.
That is awesome.
Of all time. If you
he was getting criticism for not being a good place kicker.
Yeah.
So he scores a worldy try from like 80 metres and runs all the way into the corner. And then I'm pretty sure he slots the kick.
If you showed me that clip in 2004, in real time, the drama, the crowd watching that game, the energy, the character that Spencer was, the way he put the ball down, in fact, just the all-round spectacle. In 2004, I said, this is the future. I would tell you now that, I'd have told you then that rugby should be the biggest game on the planet by the time we got to 2022. On the planet. But we are where we are.
We are, yes. We are precisely. We are. But amazing game. Some brilliant tries. The best one, actually, probably the Crusader one, Will Jordan, from an incredible pass from David Havili at 12 to Will Jordan. It's worth watching the highlights just for that alone.
Stupid question. What is Super Rugby at the moment? Is it
Super Rugby Pacific, which means you've got... I want to say four. It might be five. You've got five because Western Force are in it. Five Australian teams, five New Zealand teams, then Fiji, Drura, and Moana Pacifica.
What? So, hold on. Sorry. So
is it 12 teams. Five New Zealand, usual suspects.
Western Force. Uh-huh.
And then Moana Pacifica and Fiji, Drura.
Yes, correct.
So, where do the Australian teams play?
In Australia and New Zealand.
Sorry, did you say the Australian teams in that group?
So there's 12 teams,
yeah.
Five Australian.
Oh, sorry.
Five New Zealand.
Yeah, sorry, because you said Western Force. I assume you said Western Force at the expense. I thought you said at the expense of the Australian teams.
Oh, right.
No,
if you see what I mean.
As well as, yes.
As well as the
four who have been in and around for the last few years, plus Western Force are back in it.
Got it. So what's the force? What is the Force's situation?
They're back.
Just their back.
Yeah. I don't know much more than that.
I know a man that will know, so I'll give him
a call.
Just to mention as well, Saracens are into the quarterfinals. So are three other English teams in the Challenge Cup, being Gloucester, being London Irish, and being
Gloucester, who beat Northampton.
Northampton lost.
Wasps,
yeah. Barbary hat-trick.
Barbary hat-trick. And there's Lyon, French side. There's Glasgow and Edinburgh.
Yeah.
It's good for them. and Toulon.
Yeah.
Quarterfinals.
Good luck.
I don't know who's at home in that one, but I will find out in the next couple of days, I imagine, what my postings will be.
Yes.
So, Toulon? Yeah, I'll be up for that.
Yeah.
Toulon will be all right.
Look at some ships. So, it just does show something, doesn't it, that the competitiveness of the Premiership and the way the salary cap averages out the performances in the teams doesn't necessarily have a great effect in the Champions Cup, but it does seem to be fairly powerful in the Challenge Cup.
Yeah, because I think those teams want to win it. The English teams do want to win it, whereas some teams, certainly French teams, are a bit nonplussed.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas the two Scottish teams will also definitely want to win it.
Yeah, they'll be dangerous. Right, any more for any more? Oh, fixtures. We've got a whole... Well, actually, Sale aren't playing this weekend, unfortunately.
Just before we go into that, the fixtures, just mention... Just Giving Page, friend of the pod, Joe Riley, is doing... We mentioned this 12 months ago or so. He's doing a 50K run in a day. So officially an ultramarathon for a very, very good cause.
Good God.
Huntington's disease. Very good cause. He's currently raised over $2,000 of his £5,000 target. So if you want to help out for that, which is a very good cause, it's justgiving.com and it's Joe Runs 50K in a Day. That is a long way.
How long has he got to do it? 24 hours?
I do it in less than 24 hours. He do it in... So a marathon's 42K.
So he's doing what? 5K every 20 minutes, right?
Marathon and a bit more, which is no mean feat.
Having
done a marathon, I can testify. If someone has said
at the finish line,
just 8 more K.
Just another 8K.
I'd have just another
5 miles.
Do one.
I'm never doing a marathon. Can I put it on record now? If everyone's here, I'm never doing a marathon. Never.
Maybe one day. I said I might do one when I'm 50.
Well, technically, I didn't do a marathon.
Why is that?
Because I did the Manchester Marathon, but it was on the year that they got the distance wrong by 100 metres.
So
they adjusted my time by a time.
Thanks, lads.
They scaled it, but I didn't actually do the...
What was your time?
It was just under 4 hours.
Ooh. Good work.
I hadn't done any training for it.
Good work.
Yeah, I will not be under 4 hours.
Well, you're not doing one.
Yeah, I will never do one. I will never, ever do one.
So I have a little WhatsApp group with some mates of mine who do a bit of running, bit of training, and one who actually lives in Perth, Western Australia.
Who's this?
Sheila.
Which group is this?
An Aussie called Sheila. Come on.
It is an Aussie called Sheila.
What kind of training is it?
You wouldn't be interested.
Oh, okay, fine.
Anyway, he said he was planning to do a fast half marathon, not a course one, but he did it, and he got his distance wrong. So sent a message to the group saying just completed it, 1 hour 35 minutes. Now I'm off to the beer shop. I finished at my local beer shop to go and buy some cans.
Ooh, nice.
Looked on Strava and he'd finished it dead on 21 kilometers. Now, a half marathon is 21 kilometres and 97.5 metres. So he'd stopped 97.5 metres early, post it on Strava, smugly text the group that he's going to go and buy some beers for a job well done. And then while he was buying the beer, we were all laying into him saying, you're 97 metres short, you idiot.
Yeah, not for me.
I've just finished with this email from Sam French. He says, hello, gents, love the pod, blah, blah, blah. And he was writing during the Claremont Leicester game. He said, thoroughly enjoying the start of the Tigers Claremont game on my laptop in Madang, Papua New Guinea.
Wow.
Awesome.
As Claremont Ferrand were on the attack in the Tigers 22, Leicester infringed. So the referee, Andrew Brace, held his arm towards Claremont and announced advantage. Brilliant stuff. Then, because he is such a great multilingual ref, he announced in a perfect accent the French translation of avantage.
Wow.
A second later. Thank goodness he did. Claremont would never have known what he meant. There's no excuse not to be multilingual.
No, there's absolutely not, is there? It's one of my favourite features of rugby punditry is when they shower praise on an official for learning the second most populous language in the world. Love it. Love it.
Any other business? Watched anything good on... I watched Boiling Point this morning.
What? I don't know what that is. Is it a cooking show?
Kind of. It's a film. Okay. It's a film on Netflix. Stephen Graham. as a head chef.
Oh, really?
But the I'm whole interested. 1 hour, 34 minute film is one shot.
Wow.
Wow.
One shot. It starts...
Oh, I do know the one you're talking
it
about.
It starts with him walking down a street.
Yeah.
And that one camera, with no edits, no cuts, does an hour and a half whole film in a restaurant.
Wow.
It's pretty impressive from that point of view.
Wow. That's cool.
Do you know what I watched a long, long time ago? And you've really got to buy into this. I watched a BBC show, Storyville, and they were training, not pastry chefs per se, but chefs in France that deal with basically chocolate and sweets and whatnot. So doing the ribboning.
Yeah.
And I'm sure this show is like 2 hours long.
So you have like patisserie, boulangerie, Venice, what's it called? Viennoise?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what
Sorry. Different rules for the different skills.
Yeah, so in I don't know if this is actually true or not, but it certainly said it on the show. I don't know if they're making, you know, I don't know if they were sort of comparing it to this, but this is definitely what they said. In France, there's a few professions that you can't pretend to be. So you can't pretend to be a teacher or a solicitor or a doctor.
Presumably policeman.
Policeman would be one, obviously. Maybe you can pretend to be a teacher. I don't know. But the one you're not allowed to fake having this like French flag around your collar, which means that you've got this qualification in chefing.
And it's very stolen valor if you put that on.
Yeah.
So you're watching this thing and it's very dry and it's very dull to start with because everything is in French and it's all subtitled. And for 2 hours you're watching these grown men build chocolate sculptures of which they don't even look particularly appetizing, but they are incredible and they're huge. And it gets to the point where they've got to move them and a good percentage of these structures just crumble and collapse. And you've got the chef crying, you've got the other chefs crying, you've got the judges crying, and then they're giving away the medals at the end. And somebody whose structure doesn't collapse, he's gone through the whole thing, doesn't win the medal, and you feel absolutely gutted for him. Like, I've never been so emotionally attached to a bunch of people. But if you can find that Storyville episode, it's amazing TV. It's amazing TV.
The only other tip-off I'd give is the Ken Burns Muhammad Ali documentary.
Really? Oh. So much content now.
I know. Like did you see the Ken Burns Vietnam one?
Yeah.
Incredible.
It's just like horrendous and amazing. But he's done a Muhammad Ali one, which is immense.
There was another one I was going to... Yeah, here's a weird one for you. Have I told you about the bomber documentary? You can find it on YouTube.
No. So is it called The Bomber?
No. Oh. So I don't know why I'm telling you about documentaries with sad endings, but this is the worst.
Spoiler alert.
This is the worst of the worst, right? So it's a phenomenal story. I was going down a YouTube rabbit hole and looking at World War II bombers, as one does, and I ended up watching a program about a man trying to rescue a B-29 Superfortress. So this Superfortress has flown over the North Pole, this is the story. It's had to ditch because of engine problems or whatnot, and the extreme cold and snow and whatnot has preserved this bomber in pretty much pristine condition. So they fly out, this whole crew, and they're going to restore the bomber where it sits and then fly it back to America and then sell it because it will be worth millions. I mean, God knows how much. I mean, if you can buy a vintage Porsche for a couple of million, God knows what a B-29 is worth. It's worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
So they've got a window of about 3 months where the snow is melted enough.
Yeah, because you'll have the summer months.
Basically 24-hour light.
Yeah, yeah.
So they've got this little aircraft which are flying in all the parts. They've got a little crew. They've got limited money. They've got some wrenches. They've somehow built these big jigs and, you know, this sort of rigging to move the engines off the nacelles, and they're messing around with it. And during the process, the pilot sending things back and forth dies. Don't know how he dies. He gets ill and dies. So they replace him. They manage to get the thing started. They've tested all the engines. The engines are working. The thing is airworthy. They've cleared the runway and they are taxiing. And it hits a bump, and someone's not secured a can of diesel, which spills on the electrics. A diesel, of all things, spills on the electrics and starts a fire. And as it's on the runway about to take off, after all this money, after a dead man, after fixing the thing, finding it, just goes up in smoke. And now it's still there, and it's completely destroyed.
Basically worthless.
What was the... Did they capture the people involved's face when this was happening?
Yep. You're watching this thing burn, you're like, what's that smoke? What's that? And I had no idea what the ending to this thing was. I've never heard of the story before. I've watched the whole hour, and I was like, amazing, they're going to get the bomber to the UK. To the US.
They're going to make millions.
Incorrect.
Oh.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
Don't watch it.
Don't watch it, because you've now spoiled the story for everyone.
Yeah. And it'll make you cry.
Yes.
What would that... So Phil can identify with how those people were feeling, because it would have been comparable with his feelings on Saturday night.
Very much so.
At the end of Ulster.
Very much so.
Heartbreaking.
Mm. Right, rattle through the fixtures then. What we got?
Friday night, two games. We got Bristol hosting Gloucester. Away win?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, we will find out apparently Tuesday or Wednesday this week about the outcome of Gloucester-Worcester.
Sure. The panel meeting on Tuesday.
We'll see.
Decision by Thursday, was it? Was
hopefully.
That the, yeah.
Hopefully. Anyway, we'll see. I'll go for Bristol v Gloucester, is it?
Yeah. At Ashton Gate. Give me away win.
Narrow away win.
Gloucester to win.
Then Newcastle versus Irish.
Irish.
Home win.
Yeah, Irish. Dean Richards.
Yeah, he's moving up.
Is he moving
higher?
Moving up.
How can you
get higher? He's going to go. He's going to change his role. He's going to be a consultant.
Okay.
So I think it will be probably Dowson or Walder will take over. I don't know.
Isn't Dowson in charge of Northampton?
No, sorry, he's Northampton, not Dowson. Walder probably then.
Yeah,
could be John Wells. Who knows?
Yeah.
They've got Easter there as well.
I suspect it'll be promotion from within.
Yeah.
Dean Richards is staying around in a consultant capacity.
Mm.
He's very settled in the Northeast. He's 60 years old, I think, Dean Richards. Yeah. Apologies if I got that wrong, Dean.
I think he said he's 59, but soon to turn 60.
It does feel like, for all his success and all he's done well there, and he's had some good years and some bad, he is a bit of a roadblock to the other coaches which are there, particularly Walder. I think Walder's got a lot to offer, and at some point you're going to have
Nick Easter
give...
as well could be
yeah
be good.
Well, both of them actually. You've got to give them the opportunity to progress, or they'll be in the rights to be sniffing around other jobs in the Premiership.
So it might just be the natural I suspect it's not Dean Richards being nudged anywhere, it's him just going, actually, do you know what?
You should have built up a nice pension by now if you need some retirement advice.
He loves his motorbikes and tinkering with those. He loves living in the Northeast. He's done very well in his career.
Kind of like the Hairy Bikers.
Yeah. What else we got?
Saturday, we've got three games. We've got Bath hosting Northampton.
Ooh.
Away win.
It's a tough one. I'll go away win.
Quinn's hosting Leicester.
Sorry, scratch up. Bath will win it.
Bath winning.
Bath win.
Bigger could... Bigger got a red card, so he might have a ban.
Ooh, yeah.
Big Courts. Nasty hand injury, apparently.
Ah, that could change things.
Mm.
Yeah, I think Bath.
Maybe if those two aren't playing, give me Bath. And if the drummer was playing,
definitely
give me Bath.
Twice.
Quinn's
Leicester. Now, these two are both pretty secure for... Well, Leicester are definitely secure for the top four.
Quinn's need to win it. Therefore, they probably will.
They need to win it.
It'd be helpful.
It would be helpful, obviously.
It would be helpful, and it would help... I mean, it would help them get top two, which means a home... Or if they have ambitions...
So they'll be going for it, and they haven't got to worry. They can rest. They can go big for the next three weekends, knowing they've got...
Got no Europe.
...rest weeks coming up.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, what the heck? I'm going to go Quinn's.
Quinn's at home. Yeah. Then... We have Wasps hosting Steve Diamond's Worcester, who may well have had some bad news about their their previous fixture. They may have had some good news.
They've had some good news, yeah.
But give me Wasps home win.
Yeah, correct.
And Sunday, this is a fixture. What did we?
I'll be at this one.
We once dubbed them. What did we dub them? The salary
cheats versus racists.
Cheats versus racists.
What a classic.
Not our words, by the way. It was very much just...
Yeah, totally in jest. It might have been our words, but not that's not what we are accusing these clubs of being. Although Saracens were obviously found guilty of being cheats.
And, yeah.
That's as far as I'll go with that. Did you see, by the way, just moving on, it was on, I've seen separate pictures of it, but it was also on comms, Jack Noel.
Yeah, in the full Munster kit.
Yeah.
With beers.
Yeah.
All I noticed all those Exeter players on a stag do, all left-hand drinking.
So was the stag do post-game?
No, during the game. So during the game, they cut to the stand, all the Exeter lads with beers, Jack Noel in full Munster regalia.
I mean, it would be so much better if they won.
If they won.
I don't know why I feel uncomfortable with it. I just do.
So I also feel uncomfortable. And it won't have been Jack Noel's idea.
It's Jack Noel's stag, I assume,
It's
right?
Jack Noel's stag, so he doesn't really get a choice in doing... You can't really say no... As the stag, you can't really say no to... I mean, there are certain things that you can say no to, but that's not really one of them.
No, you cannot. If they give you a Munster shirt, you've got to wear the Munster shirt. I'm just as surprised that Chiefs allowed them to do it. I mean, obviously the playing squad weren't involved.
And they're not going
to
care.
So, obviously, not the playing squad, but there were members of the current playing squad, like Sam Simmons was there.
Yeah. Don Armand.
I mean, I guess...
LCD.
It's good to see Dollars was there as well.
Dollars was there, yeah.
Do you know what? If Bath had done it, right, I'd be scathing.
Or Bristol also.
Oh my God, imagine if Bristol had done it. Yeah, just Bristol. Imagine. But Exeter did it, so that's fundamentally different.
Totally different.
Yeah, they know what they're doing, I would say. And part of that club, and it's not just, you know, a fly-by-night thing, the culture is going for a good drink.
Mm.
They know exactly how far to go, even if it's, you know, maybe too far. But they know, you know, they know how to push things. That's what brings them tight. It's not sort of a fringe group or a little clique which I've got. It's not a new thing which I've started. But still, I mean, it's right on the edge of acceptability for me.
I did a little sharp intake of breath. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Yeah. I'm okay with that. It is close to the bone. Especially, had they have won, all fine. When you lose, it's not a good look.
Yeah, they've lost, haven't they? But what's the other side of this? I mean, the other side is the players that didn't have to go to Munster went to Munster to watch their mates, and they had a free weekend. They didn't have to go.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
Yeah, good point.
And also, I was going to say, you've got to love that this is an England international on the piss, on the telly, wearing the opposition kit. And I know a lot of people turn their nose up at the whole rugby values thing, but I just I like the feel for the sport that would have displayed to any casual viewer. Like they'd have gone, you can imagine a football fan tuning into this. What?
Yeah,
he's doing what?
Why is Cristiano Ronaldo in a Liverpool shirt?
Yeah,
with his mates in the stands.
Yeah, because the flip side is the Ellis Genge in the Umbro kit. Understandably, people went, whoa.
Yeah.
He's on a stag do, and he's in the crowd.
Yeah, and he won't watch his mates.
No
and I guess there's going to be a fair few stag do's from the Exeter area on stag do's too. So, a few stag do's from the Exeter area in Munster too.
Oh, well, that's one good thing to finish on, actually, because we got a little message from someone who's on a stag do and heading to Manchester for it.
Oh, lovely.
Mm.
AJ Bell stag do, help needed, from Mark Tyler. And Mark says he's a Gloucester fan, keeping his fingers crossed it's Gloucester's year. He lives in Bristol. He has a season ticket to the Semi and Lamb Downfall show, which is not as bad. Which is not that bad when you aren't emotionally invested. Back to the point I need help with. I'm organising a stag do for my best friend, also a JB in Manchester, on the Jubilee weekend, and getting tickets for Sharks v Bears. I've never visited the AJ Bell before. I'm a very conscious supporter who doesn't want to ruin the experience for kids and the old guard. With that in mind, where would you suggest getting tickets for 12 rugby lads?
Do you know what I would do? And it's probably worth... I mean, if it's a stag do. The AJ Bell's it's much, much better than it was in the early days. The Shark Tank tent outside, I think it's the Shark Tent, or the Sharky tent, whatever it is.
Shark Tank.
It's actually quite good for a few beers. You've got to accept it's not a town centre stadium, so you can't have all of the amenities.
That's what I was saying. I was going to say, invest a bit of money. Don't bother with... Because some people will go do the hospitality thing. Don't do that.
Oh, I would, you know.
Oh, are you going to say do that?
That's exactly what I'd say.
Well, I was going to say, one thing I would do is get your taxi booked or car or something booked for your getaway
Yeah.
around the corner from the stadium.
They have.
Because you could waste a lot of valuable stag do time getting away from that stadium.
Yes. Yeah, that's a phenomenal point.
Yeah.
Go early so you avoid the traffic coming in. Yeah, either stay a bit early and a bit late.
Or do the hospitality and stay longer.
I tell you what, though. Hospitality itself, they've really worked on it now. So whether you'll get a table in time, I do not know. You might be able to. The post game stuff is really, really good. They usually have entertainment on. All the players come to the end, come to hospitality later. The owners will be down there. I've never seen Sanderson in there actually, but he's taken over mostly during COVID. John Bentley does the
emceeing,
like the emceeing, and he's very, very, very funny. It's just a really good atmosphere. You can tell that they've put on a lot of effort.
All right, okay, so that might be a shout. If you leave it a bit longer, it'll be easier to get into town. Equally, there is now a tram from the Trafford Centre.
There is. It's a good
half an hour walk from the edge. But you can do it. You can walk, and then you've got
getting early,
20, 30 minutes on the tram.
Leave late, that's what.
Get in early, leave late, and recommendations for where to go in town.
Ooh, now we're talking.
If it ends in Mojo's... That's a great shout.
Winner.
The awesome thing about Manchester and why I would recommend Manchester for any rugby player wanting a new club is you get good bang for your buck with the salary you'll get at Sale Sharks. This is for anyone. The late bars is immense. Having been to Belfast, everything's shut so early.
Belfast. Yeah.
Everything's shut so early.
Apart from I remember being in the garage. Someone's garage.
Jeffrey's garage thing.
It might have been an actual garage.
Yeah, that's the only thing people would. Belfast is a joke for nightlife. Absolute joke.
It's fun for it's fun until 11, and then it's just, and then it's all right till 1. I'm not queuing and paying to get in places. I'm not doing that anymore.
No, you're absolutely right. Manchester is good. Do you know the way that Michelin started rating restaurants, and now everyone goes on about Michelin star restaurants? Mojos should do this for bars, late night
Mojo bars.
Yeah, so if you've got three Mojo rating, and you could just get a little guide, and you could go around all the bars. That's what they should do. In fact, we should do that.
So lads, get yourselves on a run of bars around the Northern Quarter.
And then
trot onto Mojos.
Yeah,
because Mojo's obviously Spinning Fields.
Crazy Pedro's
underneath. Spinning Fields
are some good bars around there.
Crazy Pedro's underneath Mojo's is also a great shout.
Yeah.
Crazy Pedro's.
Great shout. Love it.
Yeah, just across the road.
And make sure massive you pizza. Come say hello to JB at the Sale Bears game, because no doubt you'll be
I'll
there.
I'll be there. If they let me in, I'll definitely be there.
Right, we're done.
Beautiful.
Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.